Welcome to Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, one and all, to another evening, this Christmas Eve edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thrilled, as usual, to have you along for 3 hours of the very finest in conversation radio. It's what we're about, you know, the conversation. And, we've got some fun tonight, and we've got some serious stuff tonight. And a striking new analogy coming for some of you. We've got traditional marriage news. But most of all, like I said, we have your thoughts in abundance and as you wish to share them. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Or locally on your own nickel if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan. 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. And I want to update you from on a story that we had last night. You know, we talked a little bit last night about the fact that apparently Richard B. Dick Big Time 5 Def Cheney is... Well, he's having a hard time. You know, he's a geezer, okay? And as someone who occasionally falls into the early geezerhood, some of that I understand, but certainly not by any stretch of the imagination, all of it. But yes, Richard B. Dick, Big Time 5 Def Dick Cheney is a geezer. And he can't, I can't follow a word those people are saying in their rap music. So apparently there's been some sensitivity work going on over at the vice presidential residence at the United States Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., not too awfully far, if I recall correctly, from the National Cathedral. The sensitivity training is an attempt to help Richard B. Dick Big Time 5 Def Dick Cheney understand what those people are saying. Don't ask me how we get these things, but we do. And we've got audio apparently surrounded by his Secret Service contingent. Richard B. Dick Big Time 5 Def Dick Cheney has been introduced. They're trying to slowly introduce him to the idea of modern or semi-modern music, and we have the audio.
I get no kick from champagne, mere alcohol doesn't thrill me at all, so tell me, why should it be true that I get a belt out of you?
Now, see, I don't think this is necessarily working very well. I've heard it and you haven't. That's not terribly complex for a 5 Def Dick to try to understand, but you got to understand, he's being dragged all the way from the 16th century. And it can be a painful process.
Some get a kick from cocaine.
Hold it, hold it. What the hell is that shit? I meant a song. A real song. Something like, swing low, sweet chariot.
Swing low, chariot, brother.
Don't know that one, huh? Well, how about the Camp Town Ladies?
The Camp Town Ladies.
The Camp Town Ladies.
Oh, you know. The Camp Town Ladies.
Sing it, Dick.
This song, doo-dah, doo-dah. Camp Town racetrack 5 miles long, all the doo-dah day.
Oh, the things that a Secret Service agent has to do to keep his job. I don't think they can get the job done anytime. I think Richard B. Dick, big time, Five Deaf Dick Cheney, is going to be stuck in the 16th century for a while yet. But at least they're trying. So, you know, I'm proud of that. Well, it's the night before Christmas, so, Let's go to the phones and see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hey, Bob.
Hey, Juanita, what's up?
Well, I just thought I'd finish what I was talking about last night about Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
She was interviewed about her book. What's it called, Sisters?
Yes, Sisters.
And she said...
It's all full of dead woman's hair and all kinds of stuff.
It wasn't written very well, and I guess she didn't realize it was all over the web because Randy Rhoads used to read from it all the time.
Oh yeah, it is scintillating reading to say the very least. The part where the woman sits wistfully longing over an entire wreath made of the dead girl's hair.
I didn't hear that part.
Wow.
Oh, me. Sounds like somebody knows what they're talking about. But anyhow, they're a pair.
One of the things that always troubled me is that, you know, these right-wing weirdos like Cheney and his pornographer wife, one of the things that's been so bothersome is that, you know, these are people who hold to the idea that... one's sexual orientation is a choice, right? I mean, we've heard that a million times, right?
Lord only knows what they do.
Well, they've got, you know, they've got a gay daughter.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that.
The lesbian daughter who's presented them with a grandchild, no less.
Yeah.
But
she's a lot like her dad, too.
Well, but if people, their sexual orientation is chosen and not made, then what do you suppose little 10-year-old Mary Cheney peering over her mother's shoulder as she was typing hot, steamy, lesbian sex scenes in Sisters, what do you suppose that did to young Mary?
Well, that probably is the cause of it.
Oh, I think the Cheneys are kind of, I don't know, we're going to have a family values intervention for them, Juanita.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think they're lost their souls or something. I don't know if they ever had it. But the first time I saw that man and knew who he was, I said, that's an evil man. You just see evil all around him.
Yeah, I know.
I want to say something about the Rick Warren, too.
Sure, go ahead.
well... I don't know if you remember, but I didn't really realize what he was about. I didn't know because, see, I don't know, like, the newer people that are in that. I know a lot about the others, you know, like Pat Robertson and even some of them that are on now. But one thing about this thing, about him saying the prayer, whatever he's going to say, I really realized that why you were saying what you said about him, you know, that to me, he's being exposed. Do you think that that's why, in a way, that they might have wanted him? I don't know. I'm just being...
Like I said, I'm, 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 no, no, I, I got,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do understand what you're saying, and there's a lot of people out there doing this sort of rationalized, really Freudian kind of eight moves ahead on the chessboard stuff that they're ascribing to Obama for this. And, you know, I want it to be true.
I don't like it
in the least, but the fact of the matter is, Juanita, if somehow or another by doing this, Obama succeeds in marginalizing Rick Warren and the weirdos who follow him, then that goes in the W column. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think it's moreover much more likely to be just an act of common decency on Obama's part, which will, the fundies being fundies, be returned with an act of extreme intolerance and hate.
Of course. It's just like anybody that is using you, the more you try to do for them, the more they think you should do. And, you know, you can't win with a lot of people. There's some people you just can't win with.
And I include Rick Warren in that crowd because he's all or nothing. He's my way or the highway. You know, he went to and attended that meeting of Muslims in what, Malibu or Laguna Beach or whatever in California last weekend,
mm-hmm.
and sat there and told them about how they all got to find things that they agree on. But if you sit Rick down, and get him good and liquored up, he'll tell you that them Muslims is going to burn.
Yeah, well. Well, I looked at him really good yesterday, and he does look. He looks more like Jerry Falwell than Jerry Falwell's son, the one that's preaching now. Does
kind of makes you wonder where Mrs. Falwell was a few years back, doesn't it?
Yeah. But anyway, I don't know. But he's surely being exposed to me. I don't know. But you know what's funny? They're not talking about it on The View at all. I figured it'd be a topic about him. About Rick Warren.
Nah, I think maybe The View folks are waiting to see what shakes out.
Who knows? Maybe somebody's.
Frankly, maybe Elizabeth Hasselbeck doesn't know what to think. Or how to think, well, we know that, but doesn't know quite what to make of it because, you know, mm-hmm. there are as many PO'd fundies as there are PO'd liberals because they think Rick Warren's selling out by, you know, hanging out with that Muslim.
Like it for that, but yeah. That's all right. But I see what you were talking about, you know, when you were shot, but I didn't know he was that bad. Because all I knew was he written that book, you know.
Well, this guy was part and parcel of creating the Left Behind game where you shoot the homos.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the video game? Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the unbelievers, and then you get prayer power for it.
You mean the ones that are left behind get shot?
Yeah, you're part of the Eternal Forces squad, and you're very well armed, and you go around blowing away infidels, gay folk, liberals, lefties, you know.
Why would you do that?
Because Jesus wants you to.
And you're left behind too then.
No, you're just mopping up before you fly away, either clothes
or
unclothed.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Oh. Huh. Well, see, they sure did change a lot of the theology on that since I was.
No, they really didn't. They really didn't. They really didn't, Juanita. What they did is just made up some new stuff.
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, that. Because, like before, when I was hearing about it, and the thing was that you go to some churches and they don't believe in it. I think most of the little churches that I've been to don't believe in it, and it made me kind of question it, you know, without just believing it without any question. But, they said that you'd be gone and people would wonder where you were. Well, now your clothes is going to be left behind.
Well, yeah. there's a deep theological rift over that, Juanita, because many millennialists and post. I don't know. I don't know what you call them anymore. There's a deep theological debate as to whether or not we will rapture naked or rapture fully dressed.
Well, this my right wing ex friend, I guess. I haven't heard from her, but she and I've talked about that quite a bit, and I just told her the last time, you know, that I talked to her that, well, if Obama was the Antichrist, well, why didn't they want him to be in office? Why not? If they wanted the Armageddon.
Yeah, because that's...
want the Armageddon.
But see, it's a complicated one, Anita, because some people believe that Armageddon happens and then the rapture comes. Other people believe the rapture comes and then Armageddon happens. You know, they really don't have their little duckies in a row.
Oh, no. I know you can watch, you know, Jan and all of them, Jan Crouch and all of them, and you'll hear them. There's like a rivalry between the guy that wrote who's Hal Lindsey and the other one that wrote Left Behind. There's a rivalry. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
But anyway, I told her, I told my friend, I said, why don't you go ahead and let Obama, you know, if you think he's the Antichrist, why not, and you want the Armageddon like Hagee, I said, why don't you just go ahead and let it be, and then you can all go without your clothes up in the sky. I said, I don't know who you're going to meet, but I said, I don't think it's going to be Jesus, but you do. And I guess that kind of made her mad.
Oh, mercy.
She said, oh, well, you know, our clothes, we'll have spiritual clothes. And I said, well, why not leave your body then? Your body's made out of the same thing as clothes are, aren't they?
Yeah, but see, but that's the thing. All of this requires an absolute abandonment of physics. It's insane
because
you're going to get either naked or clothed. I mean, unless you've got like a NASA moon suit on, when you get yanked up into the clouds, you're going up where the temperatures get pretty doggone cold, and you're going to be blue by the time you see Jesus. And heaven forbid, he pulls you on into outer space, because then it's nothing but vacuuming, and you're going to go. And there's no, and you just kind of get all.
And the thing is,
it's just like Logan's Run, yeah.
Are they going to leave their implants behind? Are they going to leave their?
Well, that depends on whether the plastic surgeon was a Bible-believing Christian. And if he is, then the saline implants was saved to begin with.
But to me, I think that's an insult. God, I mean,
sure it is. That's why these people aren't Christians, all right? They're not okay, maybe they're Christians, but they're certainly not followers of the teachings of Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter. No, not by any stretch of the imagination.
But anyway, it's very complicated, but I see that this guy's teaching a lot of that stuff too, and I think I wish more people understood, you know, that are on the left side, understood just where all this junk is coming from.
But they don't study it. It's beneath them, you know, that sort of thing. And as a result, you just have to sit, a lot of us have to just sit there in wide-eyed wonder looking at it. I mean, Agnes and I took her to a doctor's appointment earlier today. And on the way back, just kind of cruising through the radio dial, hoping to get some Christmas music or some such. And instead, I ran across Christian Talk White Radio on the FM dial, which is disturbing. And it was this woman talking about this seminar that she's hustling, helping Christians get out of unchristian debt. And, you know, it's only...
She's making money off of it, ain't she?
You can get the tapes for a love offering of only $99.95, or you can come to one of the seminars at an arena near you soon.
Yeah.
And it's more of that prosperity gospel stuff.
Oh, yeah. But
See, they're getting nervous now because the economy's gone in the tank, and that means people are less able to give to the gospel sharps. You know, look, the Focus on the Family laid off a bunch of people, like we mentioned.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
And as a consequence of that, these megalomaniacal sociopaths, the televangelists and such are trying to figure out new ways to keep squeezing the bucks out of the rubes.
Uh-huh.
And one of them is, all these televangelists, they hold these rallies. I feel a miracle. I feel a miracle. There's a miracle in this room. I can sense it. It's in the blue section. It's in the F and the seat number. Jesus, what's the seat number? The seat number is 12. Blue section F 12. You are going to have an economic miracle. And then these people go out and run up their credit cards. And yeah. Sometimes they run up their credit cards sending money to these hucksters. So now they've got to turn around and try to finagle a way for them to get out of debt so they can get back in debt. It's a lot like what the Republicans are doing with the presidency. They've ripped off everything we have to steal for the last 8 years, Juanita. Yeah. So now they've got to let somebody else come into the White House who will earnestly try to turn the economy around so that hopefully by 12 and no later than 16, they can come in and re-rob us.
I believe you. I've heard that, and I believe you. You have to understand more and more about those people, what they are like, and how the people that follow them, how they believe. You just can't get to them. You know.
Yes.
And there's no need in trying. I think after a while, you know, just okay. That's the way you want to think. I told her, I said, you just don't want to know any better. And I said, you're being deceived. No, I'm not. I know what I'm doing. But, you know, so anyway, okay.
And you know, I love doing that with these people. They're going to, well, tell me, brother, when we rapture, are we going to rapture with our clothes on or are we going to rapture naked?
Yeah.
And then whatever answer they give, I tell them that they're a heretic and they're going to hell because they're unbelievers.
Well, you know, another thing you can ask is, did Jesus go to heaven naked? That's pretty good.
Well, it says right there in the scripture, he rose up into the sky before all the disciples. Yeah. And I'm sure the Romans would have re-crucified him if he'd been running around naked.
It's just to me, I don't think these people believe anything. I just think they're evil.
It's a fraud. And the people like Rick Warren and stuff, they don't any more believe this stuff than I believe in the man in the moon.
Yeah.
What they believe in is the power of all of this stuff to terrorize people into giving them money. And that is ultimately their God. Their God is Mammon.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, that's about all I'm thinking of. But I'm going to tell you, I had a little experience this week. I was held prisoner by a dog.
Oh, no. You okay?
Well, what happened? See, I've got some new cats, and I finally found a place where I could get them fixed, you know, a couple of them fixed really cheap. Because they want tons of money, I mean. And the Humane Society, it's months before you can get anything done because they only do about 10 operations a month. And it's just, and then the ones that are real low pay are, you know, they're way booked in advance. So anyway, I found this place. It's really a laid back place run by two little girls and, I call both girls, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
They're not, you know, they're so cute, you wouldn't think, but they're really smart and really nice, so anyway, I went out and looking for my cats because they go in and out, and I've got holes in my floors because the floors need replacing, and the cats come in and out, and so I went out and I saw this big old dog in a shed. And so I thought, well, you know, I just didn't think more about it. Well, later on, I was coming out of the bedroom and there was this big old dog. He's black and white and he's loving, you know, over loving.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't walk a step without him. He trying to hug me and trying to, you know.
Now, Juanita, were you wearing that Burger King meat scented perfume?
I know. But he'll get up and dance, you know, around on his hind legs. And I thought at first maybe he was a Great Dane, but he is just so loving. But he's running my cats off, and I contacted my son. I said, you've got to come over here and help me, because the only room I was safe in was my bedroom, because I could close the door on him. And but as soon as I'd open the door, he'd be right at the door. And he's beautiful. He's black and white. A beautiful dog. But finally,
somebody's got to be missing him. A dog that loving and a dog that, yeah.
Yeah, and my son come over, and he was able to train him, and we got him a harness and some chains and tied him up, because that's the only way to control him, and he seems pretty happy with it. But my son tried to take him for a walk, and he just about ran away with him. And he was trying to...
That's old. This is a big old dog.
Yeah, he's a big dog. And I just don't know what to do. But I've only had three of my cats to come back since he's been tied up. So I don't know. But I couldn't take any of them to...
Well, you can't blame the cats. A dog that big, they got to look at me. No, I'm not taking the chance.
Barking at them, yeah. And I couldn't do anything about it. It just was unbelievable that the whole night. And finally, I contacted my son. I said, "You got to come over here. I can't handle this anymore," because I would have had to call the police or something. But honestly, he was holding me hostage.
A hostage of love. Yeah.
And see, I have a problem with being dizzy, with falling, and I was trying to hold on with him. And then I went out to feed him when he was tied up, and he got his chain wrapped around my ankle. And I thought I never was going to get loose from that.
Merciful.
But we figured out how to feed him, you know, without getting that close to him.
Yeah.
So anyway, I don't know. That's just
tell my. Well, he's come to you for Christmas.
Well, I said, you know, I said to my son, I said, "Do you think God sent him here because my son fell for him, you know, and where he's living, he can't have a dog that big, but he's one of those you'd love to have riding in the truck with you and all like that, you know."
Yeah.
But anyway. So I don't know why I was telling you that, but it was just so weird. I thought, what is going to happen next? But there must be some reason for it.
Well, I reckon there probably is. And,
I don't know.
You might be just the person for that dog to have come to.
Well, try to treat him right. I didn't want to have him tied up by the neck, you know. I got a harness for him. So I guess I'm trying.
Well, I tell you what, keep us updated on him, Juanita. And,
okay.
And you know what? I don't think you're going to have any. It sounds to me you won't have any burglar problems coming around.
I don't think so. No.
Because those big ones, they got to bark, don't they?
Uh-huh. Yeah. But anyway, he's just a really loving dog. He really needs a big yard, you know.
Mm-hmm. And somebody that can romp around with him and so forth.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, keep us posted, and we will talk soon.
Okay.
All right.
I'll try to send you a picture of him.
Oh, that'd be wonderful. I'd love to see him.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our view correspondent, Juanita. And, you know, we got a picture of Alan the Trucker's traveling companion, Lula, the other day, a beautiful standard poodle. Love to see a picture of this. And I don't know. Sooner or later, we're going to get enough stuff together to really start putting together the listener's gallery on headonradionetwork.com if you want to do something like that. Let's see. It's about half past the hour, and I don't want to just segue right out of what we were talking about with Juanita into something entirely different. So let's take a little music break, and let's see, a little something Christmassy. Let's see. Yeah, we'll take this. We'll take this. Jump right in if you want to. or there's a there's a topic I want to hit out of the break. Either way is fine by me. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob, and I'll be right back. Isn't that just nice? That's downright gorgeous. And more where that came from, depending on the time constraints of the evening. Let's go somewhere fun. I told you there'd be some fun tonight. Let's try this. A new commercial out for the Alliance for Climate Protection and the Reality Coalition. Lovely piece of satire, a beautiful piece of parody, and you know how much I love that kind of thing. In an oak paneled office with a leather office chair and a great big desk, a coal executive stands talking before a painting of some previous coal whore. Let's try it and see if the audio works as well without the video.
At Coalergy, we view climate change as a very serious threat to our business. That's why we've made it our primary goal to spend a large sum of money on an advertising effort to help bring out and complicate the truth about coal. The fact is, coal isn't dirty. We think it's clean. Smells good, too. So, don't worry about climate change. Leave that up to us.
In reality, there's no such thing as clean coal.
Now, ain't that the truth? That's the way you get them. You get them not by taking them seriously, but by pointing out what a bunch of fools they are, what a bunch of greed-infested, creepy fools motivated by nothing but a desire for more money, more money. You know how that goes. And, it calls up that wonderful, wonderful line that I love so much.
Why are you doing it? How much better can you eat? What can you buy that you can't already afford?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So it seems incumbent upon me to share with you a little bit of news coming out of our sister coal state and a victim of the mountaintop removal industry, perhaps not on the same scale as West Virginia, but on the same scale nonetheless. And we go to the reportage of WBIR-TV, courtesy of their website, WBIR.com, which is a Knoxville station, talking about a little something that happened in Roan County, Tennessee, yesterday.
As you can tell, very frigid out here. Workers are still trying to clean up debris after a mudslide that resulted from one of the ash ponds here at TVA actually failed and sent a full mountain full of ash, mud, and water straight down the hill and damaged at least a dozen homes here in Roan County. Now, we also know that that damaged 15 homes. Crews are still out here trying to clean that up. TVA says it's still trying to figure out exactly why it failed. There was one house that was actually completely washed into the street. I've talked to some of the family members, a relative who was in that home when it was washed away. He was able to escape, and the mother of that family was able to describe exactly what he told her happened.
He said he heard a noise. He thought the house was falling. See, the backside of the house is on a big hill, and he just thought the house had collapsed. He had no idea what was going on. He said he woke up and the ceiling was on him. He couldn't see anything.
Now, family members said that he was actually able to kick out a window and escape from the home. He was able to walk away from that accident. He is now at Roan Medical Center undergoing some treatment. As you can imagine, very, very cold out here. So I believe he had some low body temperature. They were trying to get that temperature back up. But, you know, you think about this family, they've really lost everything. A house full of mud, losing Christmas presents, everything. The daughter of the family who actually lives in that home spoke about what this experience has been like.
All of our lives in that house, you know, all of our stuff from when we were kids, and we'll rebuild, but it's so painful to lose all those memories.
Now, Red Cross has set up shelters for people whose homes were damaged at Roan State Community College. Again, TVA is still trying to figure out exactly what caused this. Obvious factors could be the cold weather and also all the rain we've had here in the last week, but they're not going to be able to make a full assessment of that until daylight comes out. But they do say they don't think that any of the other ponds, ash ponds there, are in any danger. Back to you.
All right, Jim. Thanks very much for that report live from Roan County.
Yes. Stop it with your Crest white strips. The externalized cost of coal. See, there in Kingston, Tennessee, there is this, or maybe Harriman, thereabouts, there's this really, really, really big pile of coal filth. Now, you'll note that he said it was, you know, it was ash in a pond. You know, it's a pond. It's a pond. Ponds are small, right? Well, just to let you know, they refer to the seas of toxic coal goo that hang over people's heads in Appalachia that hold billions, literally billions upon billions of gallons, like the one above Marsh Fork Elementary School in western Raleigh County. They refer to that as a pond, and it holds, 2.8 billion gallons? Yeah, that's a pond. And so it was something similar. And what happened there in Roan County, Tennessee, was that the dirt dam, just like dirt dams all over Appalachia that hold back this filthy goo, the dam gave way. The dirt gave out. And that sludge, that vile, poisonous, life-threatening sludge just poured down on the residents of the area. Now, were you to see the video, you would notice that these are not rich folks who got their homes inundated and destroyed. It's funny how this works out, but they never build the toxic sludge seas and the little dirt dams that hold them back. They never build these things, above a Rockefeller's house or above, they don't build them near bushes. They don't build them, there's no toxic goo anywhere near, Richard B. Dick, Five Death Dick Cheney, Big Time, none of that. Just to help you get a little bit of perspective on this, this was a little one. This was a little one. By comparison, the Exxon Valdez dumped about 11 million gallons of crude oil into Prince William Sound in 1989, okay? And we know what a nightmare that was. In the case of the Harriman spill, the Harriman flood, the Harriman non-pyro but still clastic flow, that was 500 million gallons. Okay, quick mathematics. That was 50 times the size of what happened with the Exxon Valdez. And while crude oil is not exactly good for you, and it's terrible for the wildlife, waterfowl, water creatures, this is a little bit different because this is, that you think, oh, it's just ash. You ever tried to clean out your barbecue grill after a little bit if you forget for a couple of days and maybe it rains and it gets that is some nasty business, wet ash. In fact, isn't the front end of making lye soap wet ash? I'm just asking here. I don't know the recipe. Well, this particular ash is chock full of fun stuff like arsenic and lead and mercury. And you know what? It's okay. Because, again, it wasn't a Rockefeller. It wasn't a Bush. It wasn't some Wall Street investment banker's home that got destroyed. It was just, poor people, working folks. That's all. Now, as far as other aspects of this incident, there have, of course, already been fish kills. Going to be a long time before you can eat a catfish out of any of them streams. Yeah, pretty pictures of gray, nasty, dead fish just washed up on the bank. It has been written by WBIR that just south of Kingston's TVA steam plant, a thin layer of something coats the top of the Clinch River. Fishermen say they've never seen it before. This is reporting by Anthony Welch. Jody Miles of Midtown says, when all the other water around here is muddy, you can always come here and fish because it's pretty clear where the water turns all the time. It was, in fact, one of Jody Miles' favorite fishing holes. On the banks near the plant, it's easy to find dead fish of all varieties, especially shad. He says, I don't want to drink it. It don't look healthy to me. Reckon they can bring all this life back that's going to die from this mess? The water's usually clear, not gray. This is, I don't know what all this is going to kill, but it's definitely killing the fish in here. Newsflash. It's killing more than fish. It's going to kill a lot more than fish. here's the best part. You know, we've talked about these PR flags. Well, they've got one at the Tennessee Valley Authority, and his name is Spokesman Gil Francis. Now, bear in mind, there's dead fish all over the riverbank coated in something nasty. And TVA spokesman said that they're not aware of any fish kills, and they're working with the Tennessee Department of Environment and Conservation to examine and mitigate any environmental damage it may have caused. You see, these dead fish, they measure in the hundreds of thousands. And he said, the TVA spokesman Gil Francis said, it may have been a product of the sudden dip in temperatures. Yep. Because we've all seen, you know, it gets blue-ass cold like it is right now, and the next thing you know, all the fish in the rivers are dead and washing up on the side of on the banks there, or they're coated with gray goo. That gray goo is actually something that the fish exude to try to protect themselves from the cold. I'm making this part up. No, TVA spokesman Gil Francis said, Gil, oh my God, I can't make this stuff up. Gil Francis talking about a fish kill? Whew, mother. I think it's too early to talk about toxins. We're doing an analysis, but you have to remember, you introduce a lot of ash material that in itself could cause problems with fish, perhaps. But at this point, we need to do an analysis. Yeah, let's analyze. 500 million gallons. That spill was roughly, okay, quick math time. That was a sixth of what hangs over little elementary school children's heads at Marsh Fork Elementary School. A sixth. One sixth. Slightly less than 20%. And everything is dying. Tennessee Valley Authority has mobilized skimmers, which are on the way. About a mile downstream in downtown Kingston, the WBIR 10 news crews were not able to find any similar evidence of dead fish. Jody Miles said, I don't know that all this can be cleaned up. It's been running since 11 last night, so you know it's all in the river. See, they put these coal-fired power plants in places where you won't think about them. No, the only thing you're supposed to think about is the fact that when you turn your electricity comes from your wall socket. It's just a little miracle that lives inside your house, that electricity. There's nobody sick in Appalachia. There's nobody gonna get sick in places like Harriman, Tennessee. No. There's no connection there. You quit thinking. Oh, now you just quit worrying your fuzzy little head about it. Because the coal bosses are on the job. But I can't help thinking about the connections, the links in the chain in this kind of thing. Because you see, the Tennessee Valley Authority literally saved Massey Energy several years ago. Massey was forbidden because of its frequent, numerous, voluminous floutings of regulations and environmental laws and safety laws, that kind of thing. They were forbidden from doing business, or the federal government was forbidden from doing business with them. Well, that didn't slow down the Tennessee Valley Authority. The Tennessee Valley Authority kept on ordering that Massey coal, which, of course, comes from the places like the Coal River Valley. And Massey kept shipping it, and it is the only thing that kept Massey from absolutely dropping dead. And they're buying it to this day. So, just to sort of run out the whole thread here, we blow up the mountains in Appalachia. in order to provide coal to outfits like the Tennessee Valley Authority. And where they blow up the mountains, people are suffering various and sundry hellish diseases, things like gallbladder disease, kidney disease, liver disease, cancers. As I've mentioned, it has been documented in some areas that people's, children's teeth are literally dissolving in their heads, not for want of brushing. Because the fact of the matter is, if you get right down to it, Appalachian folk are rather fastidious. Because we have to live with a lot of nastiness. And therefore, even if we don't have a lot, what we have, we try to take care of. And we try to stay clean. Because we live among filth. We breathe filth. We drink filth. Filth pours, it pours down our hollers and is in our streams. It poisons the wildlife around us. But despite all that, we ourselves try to be clean. And we bathe. And we brush our teeth. And we teach our little children to brush theirs. And yet there are places in West Virginia right next door to where they're destroying the mountaintop removal, my rear end. Here, henceforward, it is mountain removal. Because when they're done, I don't care what they do to it to reclaim it. It ain't a mountain anymore. That mountain has been removed. And so I'm excising that word top for mountaintop removal because I don't want anybody out there who, you know, who lives in like a vast flat place or something. I don't want anybody getting the idea that, you know, oh, they're just skimming off the top of the mountain. And yeah, it used to come to a point and now it just comes to a little flat spot. And it's okay, but it's still a mountain. It's not a mountain anymore. And the process of removing that mountain, 600, 800, 1,000 feet of it, unleashes untold toxins into our environment. And so, once they've done that to us, we ship it downstream to places like Harriman, Tennessee, where they burn it in a dirty old coal-fired power plant that there's no way to make it clean. And they take the byproduct of that burning, the ash, you see, and they build a little sea, and they dump the ash into the lake. And the lake is held back by nothing more than a pile of dirt. And at just the wrong time, a few days before Christmas, people are run out of their homes, as the woman noted, their memories. You know, maybe po' folks' memories, but by God, their memory's just the same, and they have the same value as the memory of one of our betters about that time that they had that absolutely stunning round of cricket up at Kennebunkport. Our memories are as valid as those. And they were stolen. Family photographs, they don't come back from being inundated in toxic goo. You don't want to be around that stuff once you're out of it, and you may be years cleaning it out of your system if you were even exposed. But it's all okay as long as the lights keep coming on, and as long as people can be convinced to think that their electricity comes from their wall. Doesn't. And in this whole process, what we are reminded is that we are all co-opted into a system that is utterly and absolutely toxic to everything it touches. People fighting for environmental and social and economic justice in the coal fields of West Virginia. Well, We have brothers and sisters downstream in Harriman, Tennessee now. And I hope there's going to be some organizing down there. I hope maybe Sachem, Save Our Cumberland Mountains, will get in there and start explaining to these people why it happened, and that electricity doesn't just come from the wall, and that it's going to happen again and again and again. It happened in Roane County, Tennessee yesterday. In 2000, it happened in Martin County, Kentucky. West Virginia is dotted with these multi-billion gallon seas of filth. And it will happen here just as in 1972 it happened here on Buffalo Creek. And we're going to the extent that it will be covered or even picked up in the for-profit national media, we'll find out more about what was lost in Roane County, Tennessee, in a spill of absolute poison that is 50 times the size of what happened in Prince William Sound. We'll find out. We will certainly find out. And the news will not be good. So that's what life is like in one corner of Appalachia this evening. And I just think of them. Think of the people there. Remember them. Because these are the people who are sacrificed so some dude can run 3 refrigerators, 4 televisions, and leave his computers and lights on all night. That is the price that is paid. We'll come back and take your calls at 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or 304-658-3333. Email to bob@headonradio.com. Jump right into the conversation. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, and we'll be right back.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
You get an idea of why the work of Coal River Mountain Watch is so vitally important. To see, there's a lot to be said that if we get mountaintop removal stopped, the next Harriman, Tennessee may not happen. Because, among other things, it's hard not to realize that if you've got some pretty windmills up on your ridge tops instead of dirty old filthy coal-fired power plants, well, daggummit, I haven't seen a story in the longest time about a windmill sliding down a mountainside into somebody's house. And carrying 300, 500 million gallons of poisonous goo along with it. Sorry, just haven't. And just a little element of design information. And something that I find interesting, and I think you will as well. We'll go right to the phones. A little design detail. David in Tennessee reminds me. Within that coverage, on that earthen dam failure, is the location of those so-called ponds in relation to the big steam plant that burns the coal for electricity production. Knowing that dirt dams fail, knowing that, these lakes, these ponds, these seas of toxic goo are actually below the elevation of and many, many miles from the plant itself. You see, the TVA wants to protect its plant. The people around there, not so much. Those po' folks don't make them no money. Reminds me of what my dear friend Laurel Scarborough says. We don't live where they mine coal. They mine coal where we live. And the same thing is true with a wrinkle in Harriman, Tennessee. They don't burn coal. They don't live where TVA burns coal. TVA burns coal where they live. But they're expendable, just to the same extent that a couple of three-year-olds in West Virginia, blown away by daddy, is the little blood sacrifice that we pay so that the NRA can run around saying we got our freedom to have our guns. Some houses and some lives in Harriman, Tennessee, in Roane County, Tennessee, are the price we pay, all of us, for those four televisions, three computers, and two refrigerators that run 24/7 when we only need one of each. Did I just make a communist noise? I'm so sorry. Let's go to the phones. Renee Louise is with us. Hey, Renee Louise, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm a little creeped out.
Yeah, well, you got me going again here because, and again, I'm going to have to apologize. I might have to jump off sooner than I'd like to. But we're just talking again, and listen, I'm wondering if I know I sent you two emails about when we had talked previously about Rachel Maddow getting the coal, the clean coal thing wrong.
Right.
And I really think we need to act on this, whether it's like doing a letter, like I said to you, where all of us can get in on it, and like an open letter or something. But it has to be put out there, and now the longer it's left hanging with the untruth about it, the harder it's going to be to dismantle it. And I can see nobody better than you, your knowledge. You're such a wonderful advocate for this. Just your charm too, but also your knowledge on it. Plus the guys at Cold River Mountain Watch. Who better to set up a letter for us at least, at the very least, if not try and contact Rachel in some other way. And I know if you can put the facts out, which you guys can, lay them out straight for her, she's going to want to look at this. She's not going to want to be putting something out there with her name on it. That's wrong.
Well, that's okay. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. We talked about a week and a half ago about this. And true to my word, I fired off no small missive. And I received copies from a couple of other listeners to the horn who did the same. Not a word. Now that I'm not saying I'm not naysaying what you're saying, but I am saying that it is hard to get through. And you're right, we have got to persist in our efforts. That's not a reason to quit. That is a reason to persist.
Exactly. And by any chance, you know, and I know I mentioned it to you too. Michael Malloy worked with her. You know him.
Yeah.
And I'm sure if he can help, he just did a thing with her back in not too long ago in Seattle. With a bunch of other liberal talk show hosts. And perhaps he can give you a lead onto her as well. And you have us, the Horn, and if you work up something where you want the Horn, the supporters of the Horn, us listeners here, to support you on this as well and sign on to it so that we have more than, you know, it has to be a force that is focused and organized and all at once. You know what I'm saying? It can't be a drib here and a drab there. We have to all get together and do it. Boom, one shot.
Yeah, it's got to have some momentum. You know, you just made a little light go on in my head, Renee Louise.
Good. That's what it's about, right?
Yeah, it is. And one of the things that occurs to me, I don't know how we would pull it together, but it might be worth talking with all of the environmental groups, and that's such a short, that's such a shorthanded way of saying things. This isn't strictly environmentalism. This is social justice and economic justice as well. I don't know if we could pull together a means of doing it, but maybe what we need to do is put on a progressive liberal radio summit.
You know, well, there you go.
And bring everybody in and invite them to broadcast from the coal fields for a day.
Great. See, Bob, there you go. See, we have to take, first of all, we have to take the words I can't and I don't know out of our vocabulary or anything like that, because that stuff just limits you. Your thoughts and your words are so powerful, and it just sets limits. We have to take all that and put it aside. Look at the idea you just came up with. And I know us, the listeners at the Horn, are going to be more than behind you, and I'm sure we can bring at least one, I'm sure more, another person along with us to support you on this. And the more, plus what you're talking about, the other groups getting behind it as well. But again, even if you start with, like I said, dragging Mike Malloy in it, I know he would be interested in this topic completely and supporting you on it. But I mean, if you can get to Rachel even, you know, boom, even earlier, that's even more exposure, quicker, faster. But I love your idea of the summit as well. I think that's fantastic. And there's no reason. I mean, you have your people over at Cold River Mountain Watch. They've got to know how to contact these other organizations and whatnot too. I mean, I'm a novice. I know such a little amount about it, you know, and I should know more as well. So I like this too because you're educating me as well. But even with just the small amount that I know, just the fact that I know in my heart this is not right, And I know more people who would hear about it would feel the same if they knew the truth. And there's people who are being affected every minute, every second, where we sit here and just talk and listen instead of doing. And it's, again, it's about, I even wrote it to you, this is how we talk about how the soul of our country, the soul of we the people has been lost. The only way we're going to get it back is for us, we the people, to do it. So let's stand up and do it. Maybe it starts with us people, a little we the people here at the horn. You know, good. Let's do it. Let's stop talking about it and let's be it. That's what gets me frustrated. Yes, it's wonderful to talk about it and to have the knowledge and understand it, but if you don't do anything with it, it's just knowledge. I have this definition of wisdom that I have. Wisdom is knowledge in action. You know, if it's just knowledge, what good is it?
And it is, really? Right. Well, if it's just sitting there, it's not doing anything.
Yeah,
I understand completely.
And look at what's happening. Look at the story you just told. And that's one out of how many? Out of how many years and years and years and years and years of it?
And we need
to... haven't done anything.
You know, there's a lot of people, and this is not excuse-making, Renee Louise. There's a lot of people that are just now waking up to it.
I know, but see, that's right. It is. That's excuse making. I don't care. There's, you know what?
And
right
what we, but what we need to do is capitalize when, on upon that awakening.
Absolutely.
We need you to. Know. You know, I would suggest if I was the little field marshal of all of this, but I'm not.
You are.
I would suggest that we need to have organizers on the ground in Roane County, Tennessee, yesterday. And of course, there are organizations down there that are already working. And, you know, you don't want to put them off or anything. But I'm talking about door-to-door, the door-knocking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And start talking, you know, and explain, this was not an isolated incident. This is going to happen again and again and again and again.
See, this is why I think, too, if you can get it to Rachel Maddow, it's a greater way of getting it out there quicker as well. You know what I'm saying? More exposure, a broader field,
right.
Quicker. And
well, I'll shoot her, you know what, I'll shoot her another note.
And I'm telling you too, Mike Malloy would be. I'm sure he would be more than happy to help you. He has. If he can give you a way of contacting her, I know he would. You can't tell me he wouldn't.
He
definitely supports you. He called you on the anniversary of the horn.
That's right. That's right.
Give me a break. Come on. Excuses here.
No, I will get in touch with him
passes.
As well.
No passes.
No passes, exactly.
No passes. No passes for you, no passes for me, no passes for any of us. That's how we got where we are. That's why we're looking at what we're looking at coming at us right now.
Yeah.
So we're going to continue the talking and the listening and the doing nothing?
Well, hopefully the talking and the listening is engendering action.
Well, then we better stand up and do it, huh?
Yeah, and it is happening. I mean, I know for a fact that it's happening because of the blind copies that I get of various and sundry letters that have been written, phone calls made, things like that.
But we've got to do it in an organized manner. That's just it.
Oh, I know. Believe me, you are. Oh, wow, what a nail you just drove! Because one of the things that I've been hollering about is the fact that. The other side has millions of dollars that they pour into their PR efforts, while everything we do is sort of ad hoc from me to anybody else. And we've got to stop doing the ad hoc stuff. We got to be organized.
And we have the Internet, okay? That doesn't cost us anything. We have the Internet. Look at what Obama did. He didn't have all the money in the world either. We can take a good lesson from his, you know, I'm no fan of his, but we can take a lesson from his organizational skills. And I'd love to get in there and see how he did all that. I wish I knew more about that. The guy behind, I forgot his name, that was behind all that. Because we have to do that for ourselves. We the people have to take that and apply it to ourselves. Okay? Not our politicians. We have to apply it to ourselves. Because it enabled us to hold them accountable. You know, if they don't want us to have power, because they know if when we take our power and if we organize it as we should be doing, as we the people, as one, they have no prayer, you know. They are scared of our power.
And that you know, there's an urgency to this. I just got an email from our good friend Jeff Biggers. He's got a post up at Huffington Post. If people want to go and look at it, Ash Christmas, yesterday's TVA coal disaster is toxic wake up call to nation. And Jeff is just a genius with all of this stuff, and he finds details that I would be 100 years looking for. He said, here's the nightmare coda. Coal ash is more toxic and radioactive than nuclear waste. The waste produced by coal plants is actually more radioactive than that generated by their nuclear counterparts. In fact, fly ash, which is what we're talking about here, a byproduct from burning coal for power, contains up to 100 times more radiation than nuclear waste.
See, Bob, look at you. You're such a wonderful source and speaker to this. Like, boom, you found it right away. I mean, it would take me, I don't know how long to dig that out. That's why I really wish, that's why I keep prodding you on this. And again, get a hold of Rachel Maddow as soon as you can. Don't let go on that. And talk to Mike Malloy. Shoot off an email really quick. What's the worst you get? You get a no? You already have a no.
Renee Louise, I live in no.
Right. Well, just take that out of your head. Throw the no's away. It's not a no. It's just, okay, God can't go this way. Let's go this way. So what? That one way didn't
well,
work.
Well, my word again. I'll get writing as soon as the show ends tonight, and I hope others will as well.
Okay. What? Well, you know what? That's again where I say, will you put it out to us to help you write? That's where I think if we had something, if the guys at Cold River Mountain Watch, or if you had something for us to sign on to back you up, like if you work up something and you want us all to sign on with it, we can throw it up on the website on the horn and get us all to sign on to it for you to give you more power. You know, whatever else you need behind you, if you need us making the phone call, you know, whatever it is. And this way, if it's one thing that we can all sign on to so that all of us aren't having to sit down and make ourselves do it, because then a lot of us don't do it. If we had one thing to sign on to, it might even, you know, be stronger.
Sure. Maybe an online petition.
That's what I'm saying. Like an open letter, and we can all sign on to it. Like the ACLU does, all these organizations. You must get them. The Apollo Alliance.
Yes, I absolutely do.
There you go. We can all do that for you. You can be our Apollo Alliance. You can be our NRDC. We'll back you, all right? Put it there. Then you have all these signatures. Yeah, and it's one big womp to throw at them and to say, hey, Rachel, or whoever. And even for how about we even send it off to find somebody to attack Obama on it as well, all right? Because he thinks there's clean coal. You know, that's another
one. He has just appointed a guy who thinks that there's nothing more fun than strip mining as his headed interior.
Yeah, that's right. I could not believe that. I heard you him and also Vilsap there. That's another thing. That's another thing we should be on, because that is like, oh my God, you went all over it yesterday, so I won't go over it again. But that's another thing. But yeah, there you go. So, I mean, that's why we can't sit here and just keep talking about it. Look at who we appointed. Look at who we just appointed.
I'll be honest, Renee Louise. I'm not, no excuses. I'm going to do this. But I'm going to tell you, I'm not comfortable with this. Because I don't think of myself as anybody's leader.
But, Bob, you're leading the horn here. You're on there every day. Throw that out. You have to take your mental concept. Why do you think somebody would be a better leader? You want to know something? You know who the leader is that we the people are looking for? It's we the people.
Yeah.
And until we wake up and see that, well, that means that's you, it's me. Each one of us has the ability to be a leader, the leader that we're looking for, if we're willing to step up and confront our fears and take on the responsibility, do what we are supposed to be doing. We aren't being the best we can be. Why are we here? We talk about being late. We complain about other people not doing anything, having their heads stuck in the sand, this and that. Well, here we are too. We see it, and we're still sitting.
Well, I'm just receiving an email in from another dedicated Malloy listener. Mike is off till January 2nd,
he's on live today.
Is he?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
And so what? You shoot him an email, he reads his emails. You don't need him to be on live. All you need from him is a contact to Rachel Maddow. That's all you need, a foot in the door to her. That's all you need from him.
I will start trying to build this thing tonight. You have my word on that.
Thank you.
Prod, for heaven's sakes, prod, Renee Louise.
That's why I warned you before we went on the air. I was like, you know, I understand if you want me to back off, we can end it here. That's fine.
No. This is. I heard a story yesterday listening to NPR as I was driving home. I forget where it was we went. But it was a story of a man from Brazil, dead 20 years now. His last name, I believe, was Mendez. And all in the world he knew how to do, from the time he was a child, he was taught to tap rubber trees to, extract them.
And make a donation today. Thank you.
And he stood up.
That's all it is.
And he stood up by himself.
That's right.
And at one point in time, he stood before the microphones and he said, "You want to kill me? Kill me. My chest is open." And he held his arms out. And a few days later, they blew him away. The farmers and the ranchers did. But he began something there, and this is not by comparison. This is more in terms of what one person can do.
Right.
And if one person can do that, if we get a whole bunch of people doing it,
and you know
you're right.
You have us, you have us here. You're not going to be. You know what? Look at it this way. First of all, what better of a leader to have than someone who has the knowledge that you have? Look at the expanse of knowledge that you have. Look at the story that you just told, and that's just it too. You have the stories of humanity to tie into it, which touches. That's what touches, and that's what wakes people up. And you have that, and you can't. Don't push aside your gifts. All right, we all have our gifts, and you have that. You have that way of with these stories that you have, and this knowledge that you have of real life. That you can put forth, and you have, you're not alone. You are, right now, you're the tip of the leader, but look at the leader as the group of us, at least all of us at the horn, all right, to lead the way. And whichever one of us at any given time has the proper knowledge or the proper skills, or it might be a couple of us together as one, then so be it. Then that one takes the lead. And then we go off and, okay, well, here's another thing. Then, all right, you take the lead. You know, it doesn't have to be any one of us. Right now, you're it. You know, because you've got more on the ball than the rest of us. And with saying you, I also want to include the guys at Cold River Mountain Watch as well, because they got all the knowledge too, and they have the alternative. They have the viable, ready-to-go alternative. What better way to present this? Look, this is the truth, this is the facts, and here's an alternative. Why aren't we doing it? Just the same thing as we should be off of oil in our cars right now, because, yeah, there's the electric that they destroyed back when, but also any diesel engine from 93 on right now can run on biodiesel oil. There's no reason it costs.
That is absolutely true.
Right. So here we are, and what are we doing? We're still twiddling our thumbs. So, I mean, it's enough. Why do you, and look at where our country is, look at the days that we are about to face, that we are facing right now, and still we're going to twiddle our thumbs and just sit here and keep waiting and say, oh, well, it's...
Yeah, the condemned ate heartily. I know.
Yeah, you know, no. And there's no reason, you know what, you say you don't see yourself as a leader. That's just fear. Confront your fears. Come to the edge, life said. They said we are afraid. Come to the edge, life said. They came, life pushed them, and they flew. What is life if you don't go to the edge and do all that you can do when you feel that inspiration, when you know it's there, and the passion that you talk about on it? Because that's why I picked this issue, too. You're passionate about everything you talk about, but this one in particular hits home for you. And what better thing? That is all the more reason, and that makes you all the more better one to lead us on it. Because it's true, and it's really, really, really personal.
And
it hits home for me, too, and it's very personal for me, too. And when I hear you say those stories, it's like ripping my heart out. And that's why I'm on you on it. If I had the knowledge you had, I'd go to, there's nothing to be afraid of, and you have all of us behind you, all right? I'm not going to let one person go ahead and try to put you down or attack you or do anything to demean you. You know what? Renee Louise will be right here behind you, okay? I don't know that for what it's worth. I'm standing in the fire with you. I don't just talk. You know, I'm here to stand in the fire with you, wherever that leads.
All right, then. I'll start it.
Okay.
I will start it.
We have started it. We have started it.
Yeah,
together.
Indeed.
Not
indeed.
Just you and me. All of us who've been talking.
No. That's the whole purpose of what we do here.
That's right. And what more? I mean, that's just it. You talk about our community. You talk about the horn. You talk about what we should be doing. Well, here's our opportunity. All these things, every experience, everything that comes away our way, good or bad, doesn't matter. Right or wrong, doesn't matter. It's an opportunity for us to express who we are in truth. And this is it. here, everything you've been talking about the horn and what you see and how you envision it, well, here's a real concrete opportunity to put it forth, to bring more light to it, and to have other people join, and for us to expand that community, to expand the we, the people, to become that one that we all know in our hearts we really want. But we keep a spot, we keep dreaming about, and we keep thinking we have this delusional image of ourselves as we, the people. We're not that. But we have this opportunity now to be that. And you talk about that too, and you talk passionately about that. So why not take this opportunity? If you don't, you talk, I've been listening to you talk about your integrity and no passes these past couple of days. And I've been really having to hold myself back. That's why I sent you that other email about doing the letter. Because I was like, Bob, come on. This is about your integrity too.
Yep. Rubber meet road.
Yeah. And I don't say these things to judge you or to get
No, 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 no. That's not how I take it.
And I want you to know, too, I push you because it's what I see in you. And I, one thing you will find from me, I don't say anything I don't mean, and I only will tell you the truth. And if, or I won't say anything at all, and then you'll know what the truth is, too. But I won't say, if I don't believe you aren't meant to do this, if I didn't believe that you had the power to this, the knowledge, to see you succeed, I would never ask you either to do or push you towards doing something that I don't think you could succeed at.
Then we will go and we will move and we will do.
Great.
And
I expect everybody else who's listening to be here to stand behind you and back you up, because that's why they're listening, for this type of a thing, for this type of a purpose.
Well, I'll get it started tonight, and we will take it forward into the new year.
Great. And again, you grab those guys over, Benny and Nick and Rory. Grab a hold of them too.
Oh yeah. Oh no. Right. Because
yeah, you don't have to. You're not alone on it. You know.
No, it's the effect.
Mike Malloy. All you need from him is a foot in the door. And you know Mike, he'd be more than happy to. And please, if you go back and listen to the conversation you guys had on the anniversary of the horn. Please, don't, it's a complete, it's just your fear that's holding you back. You have nothing to fear.
Fear is the mind killer.
Yep. And believe me, I understand completely. But when you confront it and you walk through that door, nothing like it. When you go to the edge, you fly, there's nothing like it. And that's exactly what we should be doing for each other. We should be pushing each other to fly like that, time after time after time. Because then all these things that we envision, all these dreams or aspirations that we see or that we want for ourselves and for our country, for our people, for the world, they in a snap, they would be there. We just have to stop. We have to take that humanness, our humanness, and not let it consume us. Get that balance.
Well, it will begin this evening, Renee Louise.
Great.
You have my word.
I've probably gone on way too long.
No, you haven't. You have not. You have not by any stretch of the imagination. It will begin this evening, and I will collaborate, and we'll do some teamwork.
Great.
And see what we come up with.
Great. Hey, what better way to start the new year? This is a wonderful New Year's gift, huh? Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Thank you, Renee Louise.
Thank you. I'm saying it for me. You know what? My Christmas, I told you a little bit what's going on with me. My Christmas and everything's pretty lean and whatnot. But this is a wonderful Christmas gift. I couldn't think of anything better. Thank you.
I think you're right. All right. Merry Christmas to you.
Yeah, and you, Agnes, the rest of the gang, all my chat buddies who I never get to see lately.
Yeah.
But hugs and loves and thoughts to all.
And they'll be sending it right back at you as soon as the internet latency catches up.
Okay, thanks.
Take care, Renee Louise.
Okay, and Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, everything to everybody listening as well, and love to everyone. Love and peace.
Thank you. Bye now.
Take care, Bob. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being.
Oh, my pleasure.
No, hey. Is this...
My pleasure and my honor.
Great. Well, right back at you, you know?
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. You know, sometimes I need to. I need prodding. I really do. And in the chat room, hugs, Thunderstone. I need a little poking along the way. Oh. Well, if you were on hold and you want to dial back in, please feel free to do so. You are more than welcome. Just to finish up a little bit, I will. I'm gonna do something, and hopefully we can pull things together to create a groundswell that will pull all of this into some sort of cohesive whole that people can get behind. And of course, there's the tremendous work that Cold River Mountain Watch does, and other organizations in West Virginia, OVEC, and in Tennessee, Save Our Cumberland Mountains, and in Kentucky, Kentuckians for the Commonwealth. As far out as Chicago, Illinois, our buddy Parson Brown, and the Topless America Project. Filmmakers, documentarians. A brilliant article, by the way. And maybe I didn't mention this, but it's well worth a read. Going back to Sunday, I'm going to forward this to ELO so that she can get it up on the blog. Do that right now. You can go to headonradionetwork.com. And find this story in probably pretty short order. It is from the Smithsonian Magazine. It is a lengthy article on mountaintop removal and what it does to our communities. Let me just get this done real quick. Can't leave the comma out even if I'm typing on the fly. It's gone. Hopefully you can go to headonradionetwork.com and find the blog post on the Smithsonian article. Read it for yourself. Like I said, it is quite lengthy, and I'm not going to sit here and read at you and presuppose that I have, I don't know, that I'm a better out loud reader than you are a silent one. I don't think so. Many thanks to Jeff Biggers for getting this article out in as timely a fashion as he did. Again, over at HuffingtonPost.com. Look for Ash Christmas. Jeff's brilliant with an image. Ash Christmas. The I-40 Knoxville to Nashville corridor, the area that it happens is west of Knoxville, between Knoxville and Nashville on I-40. Again, 500 million gallons of coal ash sludge. To give you an idea of what that is, Jeff has come up with another comparison. 800 Olympic-sized swimming pools of toxic goo flowing through the waterways of Tennessee right now. By now, some of it's probably flowing past the place where I grew up, flowing over the Muscle Shoals in Alabama. It was reported, quote, viewed from above, the scene looked like the aftermath of a tsunami, with swirls of dirtied water stretching for hundreds of acres on the land and muddied water in the Emory River. The Emory River flows into the Clinch. The Clinch flows into the Tennessee. And, you know, every night, I don't know how easy it is for people to, for folks to just say, oh, it's a slogan. It's not a slogan. What we say. We're all downstream. And we're all downwind. From the practice of ripping and raping coal from the mountains of Appalachia. There are literally millions of human beings downstream from what happened in Roane County, Tennessee. That stuff will flow, as I said, down into Alabama. It'll flow past Huntsville and Decatur. It'll flow past Florence and Sheffield, Muscle Shoals, Tuscumbia, past the Pickwick Dam, back up into Tennessee. It'll flow into Kentucky. It will meet the waters of the beautiful river, for that is what Ohio is said to mean, and mingle there and flow at Paducah into the waters of the Mississippi. Look, America, we're going to dump some more crap on New Orleans. How nice. Actions have consequences. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Ooh, I didn't expect to get on so soon. Hey.
Hey, Kate.
Hello. Thank you for that good segment. That was really moving, and I appreciate it. And I appreciate whoever that caller was.
And I'd like to remind the listeners that without funding, the horns apt to go silent anytime soon. And if we don't keep the money coming in, we're not going to have a voice. And so if we can just bump up the contributions a little bit and keep the horn, keep the mics hot. I mean, I understand all the enthusiasm, and this is all just wonderful, but we can't do it without backing. So, you know, I don't know how many people got fired up by that last segment. I sure did. But without backing, we're not going to have even the fun nights, let alone the activism. So anyway, that's just my little snarky dig for the night.
Well, but I don't think that's it's snarky, and I don't think it's a dig,
just,
Jay.
You know, people rolling their eyes going, oh, why doesn't she shut the hell up? And somebody else can contribute. I don't have any money. You know how bad the economy is. Horseshit. I don't even buy that. No free passes. So, and I wanted to, the music is pretty wonderful. I hate Christmas music, but I just can't stand. I just can't stand not listening to, I think that's Chet Atkins playing that wonderful guitar, and I think that's probably Bob Moore, probably only the most famous, world famous, best bass player on the planet. They were like Vinny J team in Nashville back in the 60s and 70s, and ooh, good stuff. So thank you for Bob Moore and Chet Atkins. I had to do the Jingle Bells thing. That was pretty wonderful. and in one more little tag onto this, connecting another dot, I talked last night about the, two nights in a row, where'd she get a telephone?
Oh, all the Verizon boys are out in your yard tonight.
No, I'm actually at work. I got FEMA switched gears on us, and I found out at 9 o'clock this morning that there's a humongous project that's due on the 12th, and it falls off of my desk if it doesn't get done. And I didn't know about it, and there's nobody to help because that's what I'm here for. So I'm burning the midnight oil. If I had any oil, I'd be burning it. Speaking of burning oil, you know, I was talking about the fuel prices were dropping way too fast, and it's pretty spooky, and it's causing the alternative transportation, alternative fuel people to go bankrupt and to, you know, remember that? The Flying J is going bankrupt.
You're kidding.
Mm-mm. And it's because they can't get, I don't know all the money terms, but it has to do with Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and Zion Bank, who's the Mormons, and they can't get any money.
Oh, what don't they have their fingers in, for heaven's sakes?
Well, I don't know. Oh, the guy who started it, Jay something, is from, I think he's from Ogden, Utah. Yeah, that's kind of been a Mormon gig all along, the Jay. Anyway, all 250 stations are, you know, they're going to stay open. If Alan, are you listening? They're going to stay open, but they're cutting back on their cash. Truckers can go in and get paid for their loads ahead of time. They're cutting out on that and a bunch of other services, but they're still doing fuel and whatnot. So anyway, and if the J's start closing, I said last night, because of the rest areas that are closing up on the interstate, I'm losing a lot of new zip codes. You know, I don't have places to park. And the J's start going under, I'm gonna just about does it for me. I gotta find a point A to point B and get there, because there's no place to stop and live in between. So Lord have mercy, it's awful. But this is all connected to the fuel prices dropping so fast, and they couldn't keep up with the they were losing profit, and you know, they couldn't lock the, they're having to buy oil at whatever it is, like 47 cents a barrel now. I don't know, I'm exaggerating. But they couldn't lock in at the high prices, and so, or the, you know, the low prices when they were lower. And so they've got these big reserves of oil and can't sell them. And, oh, God.
Well, I noticed that our pals, the Saudis, are cutting production because it is unacceptable that that, you know, there's all this stuff that happens economically when oil, based on how oil prices work, and this is a real pain in the butt for me to try to get into because I'm way too economically dumb for this topic.
Me too.
But it has to do with the money of ours that they already hold versus the rate of return, and this hurts. Now, on the other hand, I saw a story over at Raw Story, Kate. Our Secretary of State was given thousands upon thousands upon thousands of diamond and ruby and sapphire and emerald-encrusted goodies.
But they're telling us that she couldn't keep them.
Right, she couldn't keep them. She didn't get to keep them.
Right.
But still, what does that do? The King of Jordan and the King of Saudi Arabia just give you some multi-carat baubles, and that has absolutely nothing to do with how you feel about them? Now, I don't get as much of the red ass about the King of Jordan as I do the King of Saudi Arabia.
Or Ms. Standard Oil, Her Highness Ms. Standard Oil. Also, I read, I don't know, after you went off the air last night, I don't know where I was wandering around following the chicken somewhere. Hans Blix was threatened by the Cheney Bunch and the other weapons inspector from the Middle East. I can't remember who it was threatened, and he came out on Al Jazeera and talked about it yesterday or the day before, that threatened that he better keep his mouth shut. And so, and I also hate the fact that we turn words into verbs. I heard somebody say, "Oh, well, hell yeah, he was well stoned." Well, ooh, that is so disrespectful to Paul Wellstone, who was absolutely.
I don't know if it's disrespectful or not, Kate.
Well,
it has become a word for political assassination.
Why can't we just come out and say, "See, when we okay"?
He was assassinated. He was murdered. Yeah. Oh, right. Absolutely.
It's just the act. Okay, Wellstone was murdered. Okay, and so was.
Okay, I got you. Okay, I withdraw.
I hate it when we trivialize the act and we diminish the importance, and we just use these cute little words like "miticize your car." You know, come on, fix the frickin' muffler. It's just we can't keep doing. It's like global warming. It's climate change. So there's my language lesson for the night. I don't have any. Yes, I do too. I wanted to hear. When I hung up last night, my connection had dropped, and so I didn't get to hear the top of David's call from Maine. And was he saying that somebody says you can't mix sausage and shrimp in gumbo?
That was the upshot, that an American expat in Korea had corresponded with, I guess, David's folks, and said that was some sort of heresy. And I'm still trying to figure out where that comes from, because I got
that is such crap. Oh man.
Yeah, not aimed at David, but at the idea.
That is so bogus. That is.
Well, yeah, and I got a beautiful little piece of prose via email from our buddy David in Tennessee, who is, of course, a cooking pal as well. He sourced Chef Paul Prudhomme, who is a pretty doggone good source.
Oh, yeah.
He said, with regard to gumbo, once one makes a roux, adds the Cajun trinity of onions, green peppers, and celery, pours in a good stock compatible with the most of the meat, and a blessed amount of Tabasco is there for the finish. It's the protein that the family can afford. Has trapped, did catch, or was given by a neighbor that cared for the recipient. It's all good, damn it. Gumbo is the ultimate anything-goes way to feed a family. It's to be enjoyed that night. It's to be poured over rice the next morning. It's to be the fuel for the fey-fey-doo-doo that can start at 10 in the morning if somebody has a jug, a fiddle, and a button squeeze box. And then David said, quibbling over protein source, Cajuns ain't got no good lifetimes for none that stuff, no how.
Sure, mon cher.
Laissez les bon temps rouler, baby.
Damn straight. Just the idea of a big mess of gumbo over a big pile of rice early in the morning, it don't even have to be hot.
No.
The more sausage and the bigger the shrimp and the bigger, fatter the sausage, the better.
Well, see, it's the holiday season. I'm doing a little celebrating.
Mm-hmm.
I cracked out my last package of Kaneka. the other day.
I suppose you want me to run over to Alabama and get you some.
Yeah, just get you right on over to Greenville, Alabama. It's cold enough. I think it'd stay frozen while it gets here.
I got news for you. I can get connected right here in Pascagoula.
Rub it in.
I'll just mail it in, boy. Oh, don't threaten me. I will. I mean, I guess I could cut the contribution in half and send you some sausage.
No, because our ISP doesn't take sausage in lieu of payment.
Well, shit, you got the wrong company then, boy.
And frankly, they don't know what they're missing.
That's probably true. Never mind. What I want to pray in closing, like the Baptist preacher, I've done this three times. Please send some money in, folks, because we got to keep this thing rolling. I like mountain removal better than mountaintop removal.
Well, see, I thought that would please your sense linguistic accuracy.
It's all about the words. Yeah.
Well, you know, words mean things.
Yeah, so does money. So without the money, we're going to have no hot mics, and so there it's all going to be a moot point, and we've just spent the money.
Oh, I'd like to quit sweating. I would love to quit sweating.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
I know.
That's all I can do is just keep writing.
But, you know, folks, you know, it's a beautiful thing. You know, there are people who have set up subscription payments and payments, contributions. And you know, it rolls in and, just hang on and pay out and hang on and pay out. I would be lying if I didn't say that a whole lot more would be a lot more help. Folks do what they do, however, and, you know, what will be.
But not enough folks do what they can do. So I'm talking.
And I know for a fact that there are folks doing who, don't have a heck of a lot of wherewithal to do with.
I know.
And I reverence that. I hope folks know that. I do buy a lottery ticket twice a week.
Well, then
Mark Levine has told me that it is, in fact, a voluntary tax upon the stupid, and I agree. but it is also, you know,
then I'm just going to cut.
Can't get in, you can't get on the roller coaster unless you got the ticket.
I'm just going to, rather than support your gambling habit, I'm just going to cut off a little end of the sausage and keep it for myself.
Well, no, I didn't say that you.
No. Oh, no. The boy's backpedaling.
No, I'm not backpedaling. I'm still playing that damn lottery.
Well, I want to hear other people talk, and we've talked way too long, and twice in a week is way too much, and so.
Well, but you're preparing yourself for the extended weekend.
I'm sitting here at the desk doing files for the extended weekend.
No, I mean the horn.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, being dark on Thursday and maybe probably Friday too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. You didn't.
Unless I knuckle under. I got more email today about the trouble you caused.
I'm sorry to push you against the wall. After I realized I was being just a little bit too. Oh, maybe pushy, the bitch boss of the universe. Oh, well.
Well, Ferg found out.
Uh-oh. Oh, shit. Oops.
He's doing show prep now, Kate.
Oh, I'm so... Well, I'm looking forward to that. I'll tune in on Friday and see what's up, see if the mic's hot.
Oh, Lordy.
Well, maybe it doesn't have to be Friday. Maybe it can be another day.
Yeah, Friday would be appropriate, and maybe,
for his birthday, I think that's kind of cool. For his 13th, this might be the last day of the year that you're going to even like him.
Now, you started trouble with that, too. Now, you just watched that ageism, Kate.
Well, I remember being, well, I don't remember.
No, see how easy it is to go down the slippery slope of geezer?
I sort of remember being 13. I hated the world. I was suicidal. I wanted to murder you and me, and it didn't matter in what order. I just, I hated being 13. I hated the world and you and me and everything in it. And it was a really rough age.
Well, you know, it is funny, though. Agnes showed me something the other day. She showed me a poem that he had written.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more or less his first poem. and it has an environmental bent to it. And I love the way things loop around, Kate, because when I read that, I realized that the first poem I ever wrote was for my 7th grade English class.
Mm-hmm.
And it, too, had an environmental bent.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a poem about the fact that the woods that I had played in up to that point in time were being all torn down for development of an apartment complex. And I was a little 13-year-old horse's rear end. And I remember going up, and it's funny, you can drive into that apartment complex now. It's right across the street from where I live and up on the hill behind the other houses.
Mm-hmm.
And you can drive into that apartment complex now, and the buildings are at the weirdest angles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because little me, 13, after writing this poem, went up and moved all the surveyor stakes. Apartment complex looks like it was laid out by a drunk.
Oh, me.
Take that, you bastards.
Watch that DNA there, son.
Don't I know it? Why do you think I've got real misgivings about turning this kid loose behind a microphone?
Do I have permission to remind you that that was once you?
You know what? That just blows my mind, because the fact of the matter is, he's 2 years from that was you. That used to be me.
Mm-hmm. Well, they mature faster. Yes.
He's going to be 13, and in 2 years he's going to be 15, and that's when I started crawling in behind microphones instead of, you know, going and flipping burgers or whatever.
Okay, well, we can turn him out sooner. Well,
I hate to get him bit by this bug.
I understand that. I've been definitely bit by the bug.
How many times have you heard Mike Malloy say, it's a great job and a rotten business?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you think you can make a living at it, you're a fool. But we're not talking about you making a living. We're talking about keeping the mics hot. So let's get on it, folks. Please.
Yeah. Living we'll worry about later.
Yeah, right. I want to remind people, if you need food, you can get a nice big box of food for $30 from Angel Food Ministries. It's not a churchy thing, and it's not a handout. It's a hand up, and it's good, fresh food, and they have distribution points all over the country. Go on the webpage, Angel Food Ministries. Find your zip code, see if there's a distribution point close by, and you can get a good box of food in January now. And you have to pay for it early, probably by the 11th of January, and the pickup date will probably be something like the 15th or the 22nd of January. And it's a nice box of really good food, some meat and lots of protein and vegetables and stuff. And
good fruits and stuff like that, yeah.
Well, yeah, you can buy a box of fruit for about another $20, and it's a huge box, and it's really good. So anyway, if we run out of money, we can always, whatever. Just send some money in, folks, just another $5. If you've already done, you know,
I don't want to keep you on, because I know you are burning the midnight biodiesel.
Mm-hmm.
But you remind me of something. And it's worth mentioning. Where did it go?
In the 25 open windows on your desktop.
Stop it. How did you know? Where did that go? You dadgummit. Oh, yeah, I know. What you were talking about, keeping us going and stuff. This is a perfect opportunity for me to mention a couple of things. One, up in January, the day after the inauguration, I'm going to go to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks to the good labors of Guy James,
mm-hmm.
I will be attending the Progressive Media Summit hosted by the United States Senate. And it just blew me away that Guy thought of me and that wrangled me that invite. And it just tickled me to pieces. And, yeah, that's a done deal. So I'll be doing that. And then the other thing, you know, you talk about what it takes for us to do what we do. I have this burning desire to take this show on the road. I really, really do. Going all the way back to us trying to do, even though you said it wouldn't have been a good thing, I understand, trying to do the Democratic Convention and getting poked in the eye by the so-called liberal progressive organization in Colorado.
Right. Yeah.
But thing I was looking forward to.
Ken Salazar's people.
Yeah. Ken Salazar. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I will spit you out of my mouth.
You on the road and do what?
Well, that's the whole thing. You know, I was looking forward to the trip across and stopping and hanging out and doing the show different places wherever we stopped. But I'm intent on taking this show on the road, and I've gotten myself credentialed for the Green Jobs Conference in Washington, D.C. from February 4th to the 6th.
Oh, how cool.
And, I mean, this thing is like a who's who of how we're going to change America.
Yeah.
Let me see if I can call this up real quick, and, I mean, if I can just keep you on for a second or more.
Yeah, sorry, I'm on the 877 number.
Oh, no sweat then. No sweat. No sweat. Let's see. Who's going to be there? Check this list out. AFL-CIO.
Mm-hmm.
Alliance for Climate Protection. The American Institute of Architects, American Rights at Work.
Oh, the AIA. All right. Cool.
American Wind Energy Association, the Apollo Alliance.
Yeah.
The Blue-Green Alliance, Carnegie Mellon University, Center for American Project, Progress.
Progress, yeah.
Center on Wisconsin Strategy, Change to Win will be there. The Clean Air Council, the Clean Water Action. The Cornell Global Labor Institute.
Mm-hmm.
Deep South Center for Environmental Justice will be there.
Ooh.
Environment America, Environment Ohio, Environmental Defense Fund, Environmental Support Center, Focus the Nation, Fossil Free Fuel. The French American Charitable Trust will be there.
Okay.
Gamesa Wind Energy will be there. Green Building Alliance will be there. Green for All will be there. The Teamsters will be there, the IBEW will be there, the Operating Engineers will be there, the Communications Workers of America will be there, the Labor Council for Latin American Advancement will be there, the League of Conservation Voters will be there, the Majora Carter Group will be there. We're in the M's. The Midwest Renewable Energy Association will be there, the Minnesota Farmers Union, the Occupational Health Services Institute, the Oregon Environmental Council will be there. The Rachel Carson Homestead Association.
Ooh.
The Service Employees International Union will be there. The Sierra Club will be there. Steel City Biofuels will be there. The Heinz Endowments will be there. On and on and on. The Union of Concerned Scientists. The United Nations Environment Program. Union Plus. The Steel Workers. The U.S. Green Building Council. Working America. The Yale Center for Green Chemistry. And, if things work out and we can raise the money, the horn will be there.
What?
And we will be the only talk radio folks there.
Damn. Who, why, are, what is the goal? Why are these people all coming together?
Because it's about creating a groundswell of support for greening the economy. For creating a green infrastructure, creating the green jobs that can free us from our dependence on so many of the things that we have seen hold us at their mercy.
Yeah, my fantasy is to have a green CCC, you know, like how
green WPA, sure.
Yeah, while Roosevelt pulled us out by doing what the other side called make work, and yeah, hell yeah, their freaking make work is still standing. There's a little bridge down in Oklahoma that was done by the WPA or the CCC. I don't know what. And there's roads all through Oklahoma and Texas that were put in by them.
2 miles from me, Kate. 2 miles from me is one of the most beautiful state park areas you will ever set eyes on.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Hawk's Nest State Park, and it's all that big rough-hewn stone construction that is. I mean, you just look at it and you go WPA CCC. That's what
you
that
know.
Is.
Yeah, you know, and there's so much make work to do around the country that we could be employing people like crazy. I mean, we could be putting 100,000.
Yeah, see, I hate the other side, Kate. That ain't make work. That's need work.
That's what I mean.
That's work needed.
The other people call it make work. You know,
yeah.
That's
welfare. That's welfare.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, do this for the welfare of me. I need a bridge to cross to get to the other side. So, yeah.
Hey, check this out. Also at this meeting, mm-hmm. the Unitarian Universalist Association of Congregations.
Oh, not them. Troublemakers, bunch of queers and humanists. And oh, I love it. God,
isn't it wonderful?
Be there. Of course.
And so, you know, this is February the 4th to the 6th in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do everything that is within my power to be there.
Mm-hmm.
and with I've talked a little bit with, I don't know if it's possible, I've talked a little bit with Guy James about it. I've talked a little bit with Mark Levine about it.
Mm-hmm.
If we could pull it together, man.
That'd be so hot. When is the other thing, right after the inauguration?
Literally the day after.
Mm.
So I'm gonna get in an airplane and get this. You can't fly. See, I love Ronald Reagan. He really is. You know, I get these weird little right-wing emails, Kate, from weird little right-wing organizations that say insane crap like, give Ronald Reagan for Christmas. Not too late to give John Wayne for Christmas. I'm like, aren't they running out of pieces? But anyway, you know, he came in there. Mommy, we're going to deregulate the airlines because it's free market. Yeah. And so as a result of Reagan deregulating the airlines, in order for me to get to Washington, D.C., I have to fly to one of several places.
Yep.
Charlotte, North Carolina, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Cincinnati, Ohio, Detroit, Michigan, or Atlanta, Georgia to get to D.C. It's a 35-minute flight from Charleston, West Virginia to Dulles.
We'll take a single engine private plane. Sorry.
There you go.
Ooh, that was so tacky.
There you go, not helping again.
And on any of those planes, you don't fit in the seat. Your knees are...
No. All of those aircraft were designed with little Hobbit crash test dummies in the chairs.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I don't fit in them either. My kids
get in those... Well, the Ferg had to fly once. He got it, and this was 3 years ago. And
he just barely fit.
Yeah, he says, Dad... That felt like a sardine.
There you go.
You know, and of course, you know me, I'll have to go through Atlanta. I just got to.
Yeah.
Because, I got to have the experience of doing that whole thing. This vehicle is leaving the station. Please move away from the doors and to the center of the vehicle. Hold on for dear life.
We are delayed because someone is holding the door open.
Get in the car, Bob.
Oh, God. Well, D.C., huh? Atlanta to D.C., that is just that's so funny.
It's all right. Christopher Columbus, go east to get, go west to get east, yeah. that kind of, yeah.
I guess renting a car and driving would be out of the question.
Yeah, it's much more expensive.
Oh, is it?
Oh, yeah. Dramatically more expensive.
Fuel prices do. I mean, it didn't used to be that way. Mm-mm-mm. Well, there were 17 places to go off from that, and it's the top of the hour, so take us out with some more Chet Atkins and Bob Moore. Okay?
That I don't have. I've got something more in mind.
Play Jingle Bells again.
No. I am a DJ at heart, Kate. I've got something lined up. Work with me here.
And I'm not your PD, so okay.
There are millions of people who will take it on faith that little crackers, never mind.
Kate's like...
And Kate's in here picking... No, he's just going to randomly hit play.
The little...
And we'll get, Serbo-Croatian Easter music.
Little crackers on the a little bit of lemon on the little crackers, and you got a lemon pie.
Waverly Wafers. Say goodnight, Kate.
Good night. Thank you for taking my call.
I wait all night for calls like these.
I know you do. Bye.
Bye. So we will take a little break. If you want to chime in, you're welcome to. My browser just crashed, so all my stories are gone. Help yourself. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877-4-HEAD-ON, or on your own nickel, 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com, as I've said. And, I've mentioned in the past, and please, no groaning. The very definition for me of being with family at Christmas was my mother putting on Merry Christmas, Johnny Mathis. just is. So I'm going to subject you to it. But I can't help thinking, after what happened Monday, I can't help thinking how apropos this is in regard to the folks in Roane County, Tennessee, and all the people on the banks of the Tennessee River watching the filth flow by. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be back. Percy Faith's orchestra, by the way. They don't mail it in.
I'm dreaming tonight of a place I love even more than I usually do. And although I know it's a long road back, I promise you I'll be home for Christmas. You can count on me. Please have snow and
thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
11 past the hour, and we've got plenty of time for good conversation left in the evening. Kate, you're good. And I appreciate you doing what I hate doing so very much. And I thank those of you who just jumped in the pond to get us over the hump. And it's inexpressible from my standpoint, almost. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
Doing all right. I was glad you mentioned Chico Mendez earlier.
Chico Mendez, yes.
Yeah, amazing person for sure. And while I was on hold, I was looking at Common Dreams, and they've got an article about how hundreds of Brazil's eco-warriors at risk of assassination.
Yeah, that was the thing that I picked up in the story as well that I heard. There are over 200 people who are attended by bodyguards and personal protection because the planet killers mean to do away with them. Wow.
Yep. Here's one example. An Austrian bishop, Dom Erwin Krautler, who has been under 24-hour police guard for 2 years because of his battle against developers and child prostitution in his Amazonian diocese. Yeah, yeah. So thankfully, Lula, their president's going to speak out, pay homage to Chico Mendez, and, you know, maybe raise consciousness and solidarity and concern for, you know, the people who have picked up where Mendez left off.
Yes. And that was the thing, you know. The Chico Mendez was murdered over 20 years ago,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of people have picked up where he left off.
Definitely, people like Sister Dorothy Stang, who I've just learned about in the past couple of years, but she went to live with indigenous people and campesinos in Brazil, and try to, you know, develop sustainable livelihoods, maintain sustainable livelihoods in the jungle. And she was there, I think, about 15 years and, you know, faced lots and lots of threats, and finally she was murdered. Her brother actually lives nearby here in Denver in a town called Parker, and he's, you know, fighting for justice, trying to get the people involved with her death into court. And it's been mixed success, but you know, he's brought a lot of attention to her cause.
And so, well, you know, we think about these things and they seem so far away, Preston. But as we learn in places like Roane County, Tennessee, they're in our backyards.
Yep. Yep.
Because the same mindset that makes it okay to, you know, the details that Jeff Biggers brought out, bless his heart, 100 times more that fly ash is 100 times more radioactive than nuclear waste.
Mm-hmm.
And it's okay to situate that over places where human beings live? The folks that do that, they don't give a damn about working people. And it doesn't matter if they speak Portuguese and live in the rainforest of Brazil, or if they speak the hillbilly Appalachian English and live in the temperate rainforest of North America.
Yep.
Because where I live, what's left of it really is, no kidding, it's a rainforest. You know, all rainforests don't happen in tropical climes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It can't be emphasized enough that this this region receded at the entire North American continent after the last glaciation. If you've got trees in Wisconsin, if there's anything over 5 feet high on the high plains, you have Appalachia to thank for it. And granted, it was a long time ago, relatively speaking, but it's still a direct consequence of that. And you know what? That's worth fighting for, and that's worth saving.
You bet.
You know, there are studies out here, and a lot of people have caught a lot of flack for it. Biologists and botanists and biochemists have gone into the waterways of Appalachia. They've found in levels and in amounts that are more dense than would just simply be statistical anomalies, you know, birth defects, whatever. They're finding fish that look like that fish at the beginning of the Simpsons. No kidding, they're finding fish with both eyes on the side of their heads.
Yep.
And
yep.
That's because of stuff like selenium,
mm-hmm.
and lead and mercury and there's stuff that we don't even test for, that the science hasn't been developed to test for.
Yep. Yep.
But it's okay to pour, you know, it's okay to pour it into the water supplies. You know, I'm really looking forward to this trip to D.C. in January.
What was that other event you were talking about with Majora Carter and the
That's the Green Jobs Conference in February.
Green Jobs Conference. I guess they have a website of some sort.
Greenjobsconference.org.
Okay.
And I think it could very well be one of the most important things that takes place in D.C. During the first 100 days of Barack Obama's presidency.
That would be great. Yeah, if you make a call out for funds to get there, I'd certainly send you some money for that. I'll do that for sure. I'm behind that all the way, because I think, you know, on top of kind of, you know, facing the scariest parts of this kind of work and challenging power and revealing all these crimes against humanity and nature going on, to share a positive vision, I think, is one of the more radical things we can do as well.
And I think that positive vision will be on display in bold relief at that meeting.
Yep. I mean, it helps people overcome the cynicism and despair that we're taught, you know, the kind of learned helplessness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the resistance is futile, the power elite wants to convince us. But, you know, there's so much we can do if we do resist and if we do contribute. You know, simple things sometimes, too, like subscribing to a magazine, you know, having a good environmental magazine laying around the house instead of Sports Illustrated, you know, and letting your kids peruse through something progressive.
Oh, I've just about read the ink off of that Yes magazine you sent.
Wonderful. I've been
passionate. And what brilliant work they do. It's, you know. And I appreciate you turning the light on to me for what they're doing.
Yeah, and I've mentioned you to them, and I anticipate someday down the road they're going to have an issue on progressive media efforts, and I imagine the Head On Radio Network will be included.
Oh, that would be marvelous.
I can see that happening, definitely. Yeah, Yes Magazine, you know, for your listeners, ad-free, subscriber-supported magazine.
And beautiful, beautifully done.
Free subscriptions to teachers around the country. I think they've been sending out subscriptions to like 2,000 teachers. They only come out quarterly. It's not a monthly, but yeah, beautifully done, inspiring all the time. Certainly, they don't shy away from the bad news going on. They have a very sharp critique of all sorts of problems. But yeah, the radical solutions, though, going on, not just theories, but what's going on right now around the world, in every field we can imagine, from media to healthcare, agriculture, schooling, and on, incredibly innovative, helpful things. Yeah,
Great stuff.
And, you know, the big trick, Preston, is to create those interconnections.
Yep.
Whether it's what I was talking about with Renee Louise, I love, and see, I would never have dared to think about something like that, like what we came up with, without her call, or without someone's call, without somebody processing alongside me, us, we, and that's the beauty of it. And I'm going to take this little ball and roll with it and see if wouldn't it be great? Wouldn't it be absolutely stunning if we could, get a whole handful of the people who are doing progressive conversation in this country and get them up on Kayford Mountain and get them down into Whitesville and fly them over via South Wings and let them see all this stuff and then let them broadcast live.
Yeah.
And talk to the people whose lives have been not transformed, not changed, but transmogrified by what goes on here.
Yep.
So I think, you know, I think it's a worthy effort.
You know, get some bloggers like, you know, Marcus Miletus, something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah, right, sure. You know, John Amato from Crooks and Liars, John Aravosis from America Blog, Jane Hampshire from Fire Dog Lake. And create that groundswell. And, you know, we've been talking a lot about media and our relationship to them, where these issues are concerned. And I think we're really beginning to go forward with this.
Yeah, yeah. I missed Renee's call. I did hear Kate, though, and she was wonderful, as always.
She is indeed. Well, Renee Louise basically put the ball in my court, and I have pledged to try to pick up the ball and run with it and create something that we can all sign our names to, Horn listeners, and hopefully make it go viral at places, you know, who knows where, the Huffington Post, Koss. I know that our buddies Wally and Dookie over at Morning Constitution will pick it up and run with it, and you know, get a groundswell of support for making it known that the things like what happened yesterday in Roane County, Tennessee, are not acceptable in a generational, transformational change atmosphere such as we have been promised and what has been described to us.
Mm-hmm.
So
you're absolutely right. You know, it was interesting when that Blagojevich story broke. You know, it's something that should be covered, but the way it totally subsumed other stories. I mean, there was the Blagojevich story and the story of a young child's bones found in Florida. Sad, you know, tragic. But should those stories, like, totally dominate what's called the news cycle, which is often a misdirection cycle, or send people off on wild goose chase cycle? Yeah, another thing that went on that same week that hardly got a mention was Obama's meeting with Al Gore. And, you know, it would have been interesting to hear what they had to talk about, you know. And you know, there was some reporting of it, very little. There was very much an intentional effort to just overwhelm that story with this other stuff. And let's not let them do it. Let's not let ourselves be jerked around by the makers of the so-called news cycle. You know, make our own news, lead with our own stories.
I can't tell you the number of times that Judy Bonds down at Cold River has said, gang, we have got to be the media. We have mm-hmm. got to be the media.
Yep.
Because especially in a place like West Virginia, literally it's all owned by the same people who have, you know, they don't have their fingers in the coal pie. They're up to their shoulders in it. And, you know, not just the coal pie, the mountaintop removal pie. Because if there's, you know, if there's gradations of what's wrong, that first gradation, you know, 40% of the coal that comes out of West Virginia is done with mountain removal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the first thing that has to stop. You know, I often think about the mission statement of Coal River Mountain Watch, and that is to end mountaintop removal and rebuild sustainable communities.
Mm-hmm. They've probably got their fingers in the dynamite sales business.
Oh, sure. Well. It comes in here on rail cars. Mm. Not kidding. 3 million pounds a day go off in West Virginia. Can you fathom that?
No.
I mean, go back and find the video of shock and awe happening when George Bush started his war against the people of Iraq. I don't think there were 3 million pounds of high explosives in that.
Oh, speaking of explosives, did you happen to catch there were some new tapes of Kissinger and Nixon talking about their explosions on Vietnam? Just released today, I think.
No, I didn't see that. I've been sort of up to my elbows in the coal sludge thing. What happened?
What a pathetic pair. I mean, lunatics in the highest office in this country, and Nixon making these asinine remarks about this miserable little country, Vietnam. We're going to make them suffer. And Kissinger is all proud about the tonnage of bombs that Nixon was dropping compared to that weenie Lyndon Johnson. I mean, just...
Oh, you're kidding.
It was just sad. They played part of it on, I think, on The World on NPR today.
Mm-hmm.
And
Henry, I know we can bomb them into submission.
Yeah, yeah. And it was pathetic to listen to these two. I mean, it was the kind of discussion you'd expect from, tuning into the Nazi high command or something. And,
Oh, that's just awful. That truly, that is sickening. But it, of course, as sickening as it is, I'm sure that for you as well as others, Preston, it came as no surprise.
No.
It's war criminal behavior by a pair of war criminals.
Yeah.
And I really want Henry Kissinger not to die before he's been indicted by the world court.
Right, right. Or at least hounded, by a lot of people who are not, there are things we shouldn't forget, never forget. And, they try to revise the history of Vietnam, what happened there. I mean, we've got a lot of people saying we fought with one hand tied behind our backs.
If it hadn't been for the dirty effing hippies, we could have won that war.
Right.
I mean, I'm being facetious and stuff, but there's actual human beings who sat in the room once the George Dim leader had gotten out of his Texas Air National Guard requirement, by basically leaving, going AWOL, who sat in the classroom with him when he said that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they still try to just destroy people who are against it, especially people in the military who are against it, like John Kerry.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a history. The battle for that history continues. And for Laos, and we bombed them mercilessly in Cambodia. Our own government reports indicate that we created the Khmer Rouge through our bombing. We had so brutalized.
You mean kind of the way we created Al-Qaeda in Iraq through our bombing?
Exactly that way. Yep.
But, there's a class of people in this country who would look at you, Preston, and say, well, of course we did. It's good for business.
Yeah, that's true. Particular businesses, yeah. War is a racket, as one of the great, great American heroes said.
Smedley Butler.
And a good example of a person who transformed.
You read so voluminously, Preston. Have you ever run across, an exhaustive biography of Smedley Butler? I mean, I've read War is a Racket, and frankly, it doesn't take that long.
Yeah, actually, I have. I haven't read it all, just snippets of it here and there, and I've read about it. It's called The Maverick Marine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there's a great, great write-up of Smedley on Wikipedia, too.
Well, see, that's what I was getting to, because, I'm sort of focused toward my locality. And in the Wikipedia write-up, there is reference to the time that he, I guess, took a leave of absence from the Corps and came and worked in the coal business in West Virginia.
No kidding.
And wow. I can't find anything more about it, but I have sort of pulled together some hypotheses, because if you go and read War is a Racket, you find out that what he's doing is turning around and looking back on this distinguished career and realizing how badly he's been used.
Mm-hmm.
And his career, you know, he was an enforcer for the for United Fruit in Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
I guess he went and shot some, had some, you know, did some shooting at brown folks in the Philippines for, I don't know, dole.
Mm-hmm.
Then he went to Haiti and did the same thing there, always under the guise of restoring order. He was an enforcer cleaning up so-called corruption in the police force of Philadelphia. And then somewhere along the way, and it's like 1907 to 1909, if I recall correctly, he comes to West Virginia and works in the coal business.
Huh.
Now, I don't know if there's, I don't know if there's a connection, but, you know, not between this and that, but Steve Martin wrote this play about, what is it, Picasso and so-and-so and so-and-so meeting at this, the Le Pan something or another. But anyway, it was a play about meetings of, happenstance meetings of great minds.
Okay.
And I've been, in my head, I've been going over this idea that Smedley Butler was in West Virginia working for the coal industry at the same time that Mother Jones was in West Virginia working against it.
Wow.
And, I mean, can you see where your mind would go with something like this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Mother Jones was working in the New River coal fields during the New River Mine Wars at precisely that point in time, 100 years ago, literally. And, golly, I mean, this little Zen thing, this little Zen seed's been growing in the back of my mind. You know, what if Smedley Butler met Mother Jones? And what if that was the seed that was planted that caused him to look back on it all and realize what he'd been doing?
Yeah, I
pure fantasy, mind you. No fact involved here, but I'd love to know.
Yeah, I think there's a decent chance something like that may have happened, or, you know, maybe someone who simply had heard Mother Jones or was inspired by her.
Because there was not a soul in the coal business in West Virginia that did not go to sleep at night down on his knees begging God to drop a piano on Mother Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And if Smedley Butler was on the enforcement end of things, he would have had to have been one of those people praying.
Mm-hmm. There's footage of Smedley Butler in the documentary The Corporation, and it features kind of the press conference he held to expose the plot to overthrow FDR by a bunch of rich industrialists who tried to hire him to do the work for him. And I think that was in the late 30s, and Smedley Butler came out and said, there's a coup attempt taking place, and blew the whistle on it, you know. And so, you know, it's interesting to hear Rush Limbaugh, you know, going after FDR today. You know, they're still at that. You know, they've tried different approaches than a military coup to overthrow, you know, FDR type policies. You know, they say they can't have government involvement, you know, to make things better for the people. Even the concept, you know, however flawed it may have been, they can't even stand that concept. So there were some Republicans a couple of years ago who tried to get FDR removed from the dime.
Oh, to be replaced with Ronald Reagan.
That's right.
And that took Nancy Reagan coming out and saying, stop it, you idiots.
Good for her.
Because, you know, FDR wasn't on the dime because he saved us from the Depression. FDR was on the dime because he had polio.
Yep, the March of Dimes.
And the March of Dimes, with his backing, helped eradicate it.
You know, speaking of the Reagan family, the larger Reagan family, and how, you know, complex and, you know, different perspectives.
Yeah, wouldn't you love to be there for Thanksgiving?
Well, you know, there's Michael Reagan, who does that kind of right-wing stuff.
Yeah, calls for people to be shot in the head on the air, yes.
Yeah. He and I actually had a big knockdown drag-out over drilling in Alaska. But then Ron Reagan, Jr., he's doing some great work himself.
Yes, he is.
I heard a promo he gave recently. Well, he interviewed the director of Why We Fight. Fascinating interview. And the guy more recently wrote a book called The American Way of War or something like that. But during one of his recent promos for a show, Ron Reagan Jr. said something about how, I forget it all, but he said, and remember, as the Buddhist monks at Thich Nhat Hanh said, peace is every step. And I just really appreciated that he cited that person. You know, because there's another movement going on beyond progressive efforts, beyond the growth of magazines like Yes and progressive internet radio and so many other things, and independent DVDs. There's this kind of progressive movement regarding psychology and theology, and to have Buddhist monks from Vietnam like Thich Nhat Hanh, and there are others associated with him, going around this country kind of teaching a very different way of thinking and a very different sort of theology is very subversive and very effective in changing the consciousness in this, of this country to the better. So I liked that Reagan Jr.
Yeah.
Cited him. It was great.
And, Ron Reagan is actually a lot closer to, well, he's a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And manifests it quite nicely. If anything, maybe his good work can erase his father's, it's one of those really, really old human concepts that the son, the son or the grandson lives down the sin of the father. It
right.
Pervades Greek, ancient Hebrew, Egyptian, all those mythologies that, the next generation has to clean up after the one before. And maybe that's some of what he's doing.
Yeah. There's a Taoist saying, something like, the father who eats a lot of salt has a son who drinks a lot of water.
Oh, wow.
And
very much truth in that. Back in November when we were shooting some footage for footage around here and in the studio and stuff, Michael and Jen went with me down, and I took the boy with us, and we walked down the old rail trail. Here near me, and you talk about fathers and sons. Maybe I'll ship it over to ELO and let her put this up on the photos as well. But Ferg insisted on climbing this rock face, not very high up, but either Michael or Jen snapped a photograph of me standing on the ground, a cigarette in my fingers. Looking at him with this sort of look on my face, because all along, stop climbing, Ferg, don't climb that. Don't climb that, Ferg. You could fall down. There might be a snake up there that's not asleep yet. Quit it. And on he goes up, because he's a 12-year-old, and that's his job. And so he gets up there, and he's perched up on this rock, and I'm down on the trail, and I'm looking up at him. And I when I first saw the photograph, I thought, oh, my God, it's the Riddle of the Sphinx. But it's this just beautiful little interplay of him up there and me down on the ground, and I just love it. So I guess now I have to send it over to ELO so she can post it.
Hey, great.
But fathers and sons and generations upon generations, and that's that's the thing that all these places that have been exploited, whether it's peoples in the Amazonian rainforest or the people in the Appalachian rainforest or any other exploited peoples. On this planet, one generation starts it, and the next generation continues it. And that's the only way we have of changing anything. Whether it's here, there, if we don't pass it on, if we don't, because frankly, it took me a long time to figure it out. When my dad looked at me when our kids were born. Dad looked at me and said, "You're done." And I said, "Huh?" He said, "Your life's over, bub." He said, "They're the ones that matter now." And it took me a long time to let that sink in. He wasn't being mean.
Yeah.
He was being real.
Yeah.
And so, I've started trying to look at things in that light. And frankly, what the polluters and the poisoners do to us right now is not half as important as what they do to the coming generations, because that's our fight. That's our fight. Because when my grandfather and great grandfather were fighting for the right to have a union, to have free association as guaranteed under the First Amendment, they weren't doing it strictly for them. They were doing it so the next generation would have a chance and not have to live in company housing at the mercy of the company and not be paid in real money and be able to be thrown out in the still of the night for having spoken to somebody on the street that the company didn't think they had any business speaking to, or leaving town when the company didn't think they needed to leave town.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so it's that recognition that really pushes a lot of us forward, I think.
Yeah, it certainly wasn't just for themselves. There's a documentary called Not For Ourselves Alone, and it's about the women's suffragist movement. And Elizabeth Cady Stanton and forget the other one of the prime movers, but the other one, they never did see women voting in their 50
and what was done to them, what was done to them was monstrously inhumane.
Yeah.
And the same inhumanity was repeated as well in the UK. Winston Churchill had a rather little shameful association with that. He thought the women were getting all uppity, if I recall my biography correctly. But again, it's that generational stuff, because that Seneca meeting in Seneca Falls, New York, that was seminal to the movement, and now there's a group in South Charleston, West Virginia, or in West Virginia generally, that calls itself Seneca Too, and those are the folks that I have gone down and broadcast the lectures that they feature. And come January, I'll be going up not too far from here to a little place called Flatwoods, where they're doing the Progressive Democrats of America, or of West Virginia, the West Virginia chapter of PDA meeting. And we will be broadcasting that on the horn. And again, they take their motivation directly from what happened over 100 years ago in Seneca Falls, New York.
Wow.
You know, Ben Birch named the White Rose Society the White Rose Society after the Eric and Sophie Scholl and the White Rose Society that formed in Nazi Germany.
Mm-hmm.
A pure grassroots effort to keep free speech and freedom itself alive. And you know what Ben did with the White Rose Society, again, I'm not just trying to engage in hyperbole. This is real. Ben Birch in 2002, when he founded the White Rose Society, you know, nobody, there aren't any Ben Birch is a great guy websites out there, and frankly, I don't know of any liberal talker who doesn't owe a debt to Ben. Because Ben took it upon himself to make sure that there was a central place where people could go and hear liberal talk, even if they did not live within the terrestrial radio range. And frankly, I don't think there would have been an Air America without Ben. I don't think that the people who have gotten considerably bigger than they were then, I don't think they'd be there now without Ben. And again, it's a matter of picking up another one generation's torch and carrying it forward into the next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's a humbling experience.
Yeah, that's great work that Ben's been doing for sure. 2002, you said?
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah, 2002, WhiteRoseSociety.org was founded.
Wow. Fantastic.
And, you know, it still says on the website, if you go there, fighting the rise of the new fascism. And he is, as are we all, because fascism says that if you live, you know, if you live below a sludge dam, you should just sort of keep your head down, shut up, go and watch your television and don't make waves.
Yeah, and what Mussolini said that fascism was some marriage between corporatism and the government or something.
Yeah, he said if fascism was to be more appropriately named, it would be called corporatism, because it is the marriage of the powers of the state with the powers of the corporations.
And they're always deflecting our attention, trying to say that it's the liberals who want to do, you know, big government make work projects. You know, in a certain sense, maybe we do want to make work in the green jobs industry, or make work in libraries and at the post office and at the, you know, park rangers and so on and so forth. But they're making work also all over the place, and their denial of this, or their...
Well, what do you call a mountain removal job if that's not a make work job?
What do you call the jobs at Lockheed Martin and Raytheon?
Sure.
The Sikorsky attack helicopter plant. are in the DEA, are the NSA, are the CIA.
What do you call what goes on at Caterpillar when they make bulldozers for little American girls to be run over with in the West Bank?
Yep. Speaking of which, there's that shameful blockade going on right now, the Gaza Strip. I mean, one of the big guy, that kind of really super hawk in Israel, that really big prime minister they had. But one of his aides said something about how they have to make the Palestinians skinnier. Don't kill them, but make them skinnier. Make them really suffer for how they vote and for their resistance. And
we've seen that movie before, haven't we?
Yeah, it's kind of like what they're doing in the Warsaw Ghetto.
Yeah, and wow, does that make me feel creepy.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, Preston, you have engendered a note to the Preston fan club. Our buddy Jay writes in, and she says, Ron Reagan won my heart during a discussion of the Republican convention with David Bender. They were discussing how the Palin baby was being passed from one person to another, and Ron Reagan said that baby was passed around like a bong at Burning Man. And Jay says, damn, I love Preston.
Talk about a make work project, this war on non-corporate drugs.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the effort, you know, to burn down pot.
Yeah, well, what was it? What did you refer to it? A kinder, gentler Agent Orange at work now in South America?
Yep.
Oy.
And the hypocrisy, because they're simultaneously selling their own corporate drugs hand over fist, including to children. I just watched a DVD on the medicated child and the growth of the market to 2 and 4 year olds to put them on Zoloft and this, that, and the other.
Oh, geez, I thought hustling Bratz dolls at them was bad enough.
Right. But now hundreds of thousands of kids with all kinds of really hugely problematic side effects. From turning kids into zombies to creating these ticks, and on and on and on. And, it was just, it made me sick watching this documentary.
Oh, it is. It is. And what Renee Louise was pointing toward earlier, if we want this stuff to change, it's up to us, Preston. It really is up to us. And to make those, you know, to make those demands of, for instance, the Obama administration FDA. We have, you know, and that, you know, that's what I said on election night. This is no answer. This is just a chance. And the question of the success or likelihood of success of the chance doesn't depend on Barack Obama, doesn't depend on the Democratic Congress. Depends on us. Pure and simple. Well, Preston, I thank you very much. This is a wonderful conversation as usual, and I got a couple of blinking lights here, and I'm wondering if there's anybody still there, but we'll find out. All right. Take care, Preston.
Likewise.
Bye now.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Calling from Denver, our buddy Preston, who keeps my optimistic fires burning. And onward we go, and we'll see if there's any. Yeah. Oh, nope. Guys, you know, come on. How many times have I said if there are blinking lights and we're heading toward the end of the program, I'm not married to any corporate structure. I can run over. And if I warn Ben ahead of time, it won't even mess with the archive. We're just that free. Come on. Give me a little love here. A little patience. These conversations are worthwhile and you know, I'll stay here until you've had your say. It's that important to me. Let's see then. We hit what corporate America has done to places like Roane County, Tennessee. Then there's this. It always comes back to the money. You know, of course, that it was Cerberus Capital, the hedge fund that bought Chrysler. And in purchasing Chrysler, they bought Chrysler from Mercedes at fire sale prices for something on the order of $7 billion. And yes, Dan, potato with an E, quail, sits in a corner office there, which still just makes my eyeballs roll around in my head like little loose marbles. But they just, as a part of the bailout that the Bush administration did, or bridge loan or whatever you want to call it, for which I advocated, okay, because there were a lot of American jobs on the line here. Cerberus was rewarded with precisely the same amount of money that it paid Daimler-Benz for Chrysler. So now they're at a wash state, and they themselves, and there was no guarantee, haven't seen it yet, really think we should have had one, no guarantee that Cerberus won't turn around and just zero out its books by having a fire sale of its own for Chrysler. And I'm going to be really pissed if that happens. Then this headline, this is from Reuters. Headline, Cerberus to suspend withdrawals from fund source. Ah, all of a sudden they're behaving like their namesake. You know, Cerberus, the three-headed dog at the gates of Hades. Yeah, sort of the Hotel California effect. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. You know, because there is sort of a Cerberus reference. They stab it with their steely knives, but they can't kill the beast, you know, that kind of thing. I don't know if they meant to, but that's the way I always took it. Well, Cerberus Holding Cerberus Capital Management is going to behave like their namesake, because they have declared that if you put the money in, you can't take the money out. Cerberus Capital Management plans to pay 20% of year-end withdrawals in cash and suspend the remaining withdrawals for investors in its Cerberus Partners Fund, a source briefed on the matter said on Tuesday. Cerberus plans to suspend year-end withdrawals for up to 1 year, founder Steven Feinberg said in a letter to the investors of the fund. Dig this language. You're going to so love this. When we wrote to you at the end of September, we thought the trading levels for debt were ridiculously low, and there was a great buying opportunity. Now, we were wrong. We believe it is necessary to suspend withdrawals in part so as to unduly increase the illiquidity of the fund for remaining investors, and to permit the fund to take advantage of the buying opportunities currently available in this depressed market on a limited basis. Huh? Would it help if I dropped acid and then read that? I'm just saying. Because that sounds to me like an awful fancy way of saying we got ours and we ain't giving you yours. You can check out, but you can't leave. I mean, do I understand that correctly? They're going to pay 20% of year-end withdrawals in cash and suspend the remaining withdrawals? What happened to George Bush and all that business about, it's your money? You reckon Cerberus got bitten in the ass in its own right by Mr. Madoff? And they're doing everything in their power to keep from having to let that little skeleton out of the closet? Is that entirely impossible? Well, let's cruise over to another side of the creepy street. The New York Times deal book reporting this. René Thierry Maillot, René Thierry Magon de la Vieuche, you try it, a founder of the hedge fund Access International Advisors, was found dead today in his office in Manhattan. His fund reportedly lost as much as $1.4 billion that had been invested with Bernard L. Madoff. He made off with the money. The money manager accused of running a $50 billion Ponzi scheme. Mercifully, the New York Times starts the next paragraph with, Monsieur de la Via Huchet, 65, was pronounced dead Tuesday morning, and a New York City police spokesman, Paul Brown, told Dealbook that he had apparently committed suicide. He was found with wounds to his arms. Huh? Oh, I see. He was found with wounds to his arms, with one leg propped up on the desk and a trash can nearby to catch blood. He had been scrambling to get the money back that Access International raised in Europe and invested through Mr. Madoff's business, according to La Tribune, which first reported the news, citing an unnamed source. And I'm fighting hard against an urge to be a real ass about this. Because there's something in me that says he did the right thing, at least from a semi-ethical standpoint. He certainly didn't do the right thing in just away his investors' money. Because again, I remind you that anybody who thinks they're going to get 10% a month on anything falls into that category of W.C. Fields' first law. You can't cheat an honest man. And it is essentially, fundamentally, submolecularly dishonest to think you're going to get that kind of a return. Because that's not an investment. That's a, come on, scam. And you're just hoping that you're getting in high enough on the Ponzi pyramid that you're going to get paid back before everybody else takes a bath. Monsieur de la Via Huchet's firm managed Lux Alpha, a $1.4 billion Luxembourg-based fund sold across Europe, and was invested heavily in Madoff Investment Securities. They said they were shocked. Access International did. They said they were shocked to find out that there was gambling going on there. Not taking calls at Access International's New York office. Come on, work with me here. I'm trying really hard not to be a jerk. But, of course, while the money is gone, the commissions that Monsieur de la Via Huchet made are in the bank. Just saying. So thanks, everyone. Thanks for joining me this evening. And I hope you will join us tomorrow evening for a little bit of Christmas Eve merriment. The tribe are in the next room, busily preparing for their reading from Matthew and Luke. I'm boning up on my Truman Capote reading skills. And whatever you wish to bring to the table. Thank you for helping out. Thank you for the generous contribution toward making sure we make it to D.C. in February. Thank you very kindly. We will continue to work on that in the coming month, because I don't think there's anywhere more important for us to be than at the Green Jobs Conference in D.C. in February. Incredibly important. Thanks to John Fox and Peter Godbold, our chief engineer and IT professional, respectively. As mentioned earlier, thanks to Ben Birch. Every day, perhaps we understand a little bit more why the work of Coal River Mountain Watch is so important. CRMW.net, coalriverwind.org. Maybe you understand better, not that you didn't begin with, why I say that they're the hardest working, bravest people I know. And always, always, always. RMR. Gina, it's all for you.
On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, one and all, to another evening, this Christmas Eve edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. Thrilled, as usual, to have you along for 3 hours of the very finest in conversation radio. It's what we're about, you know, the conversation. And, we've got some fun tonight. We've got some serious stuff tonight. And a striking new analogy coming for some of you. We've got traditional marriage news. But most of all, like I said, we have your thoughts in abundance and as you wish to share them. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, Head On. Or locally on your own nickel if you've got some sort of unlimited long-distance dialing plan. 304-658-3333. Email rolls into bob@headonradio.com. And I want to update you from on a story that we had last night. You know, we talked a little bit last night about the fact that apparently Richard B. Dick Big Time 5 Def Cheney is... Well, he's having a hard time. You know, he's a geezer, okay? And as someone who occasionally falls into the early geezerhood, some of that I understand, but certainly not by any stretch of the imagination, all of it. But yes, Dick Richard B. Dick, Big Time 5 Def Dick Cheney is a geezer. And he can't, I can't follow a word those people are saying in their rap music. So apparently there's been some sensitivity work going on over at the vice presidential residence at the United States Naval Observatory in Washington, D.C., not too awfully far, if I recall correctly, from the National Cathedral. The sensitivity training is an attempt to help Richard B. Dick Big Time 5 Def Dick Cheney understand what those people are saying. Don't ask me how we get these things, but we do. And we've got audio apparently surrounded by his Secret Service contingent. Richard B. Dick Big Time 5 Def Dick Cheney has been they're trying to slowly introduce him to the idea of modern or semi-modern music, and we have the audio.